so that we can adopt it with the corrections that we made? So who moved it? You moved. Okay. Donna rescinds. Can I have the second rescind also? Can I have a new motion, Donna? To adopt with the correction of pulling the one item as stated. Any second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passed? Okay, I'm going to turn this part of the meeting over to Mrs. Healy and Dr. Mitchell for our study session covering the LCAP.
Thank you very much. So for our study session this afternoon, we are going to be looking at the LCAP. This is a mid-year progress overview for our goals 3 through 6. So goals 1 and 2 will be done in our March meeting. So this is only addressing our LCAP goals 3 through 6. Teresa Healy, our Assistant Superintendent of Ed Services, and the Ed Services team will be presenting information to the board for this particular topic. So seated at the table, we have Dr. Brian Huff, we have Sylvia Rivas, and Frank Chang, along with Teresa Healy for this presentation.
Do I get to leave it here? Is that good? Brandy, does that work for you?
Just have to make sure that it gets
close. Okay.
And traded.
Yes, we'll trade it off. Good evening.
Could I just say, before you start, Teresa's going to break up her presentation in sections. So if you have questions, please wait till she finishes one goal and then ask your questions as you go on to the next one and so forth.
All right. Thank you, board, for being with us tonight and listening to our presentation. As last year, you know, the LCAP is a very large document and involves many activities, many actions. And so in order for us to present timely, we've chosen to break up the reporting out of them as well for mid-year. Mm-hmm. So tonight, as Dr. Mitchell said, we're going to just focus on goals 3 through 6 and then 1 and 2. And I know mathematically that seems odd, but it really has to do with when we gather data and what's most efficient for that. Before I begin, though, I would like to thank my Ed Services team. The work that we do is encapsulated almost 100% in either our LCAP or our LEA plan, and so I want to thank the team for doing the work, but then also pulling together to help with the reporting out, because that is an extra task, and it is nice to see that our work yields the data that we're hoping for in most cases, and just want to say thanks. But then the other people I want to thank also are the folks at the sites. The work gets done at the sites. It gets done in the classrooms by our teachers and supported by our principals and our support staff. And so a lot of this work, as we review it, you'll notice that, A, there's lots of pictures of folks out at sites, kids and staff, but that they're also the ones that are doing the work. So I just want to say thank you to them for that. So as we begin, and I hope you all have the copy of the presentation, so if you don't, it's so much easier to follow along. So these are the state and federal initiatives that we have been working on, so our Common Core standards as we continue to transition to those. It's always a work in progress as we create deeper understanding of the standards and what they look like with students. In addition to that, there's our English Language Development Standards. These are specific to California, and so we're working to implement them as well for our English learners. As we look at assessing our students, we have our Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium, so that data that comes into us that the students take in the spring, and then our NCSC, which is a very hard acronym to say, which assesses our most at-risk special needs students. And then the other standards we are working on and really picking up some steam with this year and starting last year was our Next Generation Science Standards. And then as we work towards having our students being 21st century learners, what does that framework look like and how do we incorporate those practices and standards into our learning? And then all of that's driven, of course, by the dollars of our LCFF in the very center. So. Additionally, we have some initiatives that we have picked up as a district that we've chosen to implement to support our students. And the first one is our CCGR, California College Guidance Initiative, and this is a tool that we have purchased. It's an online tool where our secondary students monitor themselves, and it's a resource tool for them to become college and career ready. And so that's been a valuable tool for us. There were many of the activities that were done under lots of different places and lots of different ways, and it was difficult for us to monitor and difficult for students to remember where to go and where they had found the information. Our next piece is about PBIS, the Positive Behavior Intervention and Supports. And this is a program where we support our students in their behavior and teaching them best practices. and how to be good kiddos, and so we can reward that and support that. And sometimes, you know, we have different expectations for kids that we don't explain, and so it gives us an opportunity to do so. And then our third initiative is our future-ready schools. As we increase our amounts of technology and its use in our classrooms, what are those guiding pieces that we need to pay attention to maximize the use of that in our classrooms in both an instructional way but also for student learning? As we continue to look at our LCAP, we are reminded that we have to have the 8 state priorities covered. And in our LCAP, we cover all of them multiple times. As you go through, if you read the actual LCAP, we had to identify on each of the goals which ones we covered in each place. And as we are going through and checking through our data, we are meeting the expectations of all of those 8 state priorities. So the timeline for this year, and just going to share with you, this is the most difficult slide to do because it's always I have to remember which LCAP I'm referring to. So currently we are in February. That's the top of the graphic. And so we are looking at the 2016 to 19 LCAP, and we're reporting out about goals 3 and 6 and providing that update. In March, we will continue to stay on the 16-19 LCAP and look at goals 1 and 2. In May, we will present, actually, we will continue that review of the 2016-19 and begin to create the draft for the 17 to 20 LCAP. And so actually in the first June meeting, we will present that draft, and then we will ask for approval at the second June meetings. And then as part of that approval is also the annual update. So we're going to get started with our goals. Our first goal is goal 3. And, Mari, I'm going to ask you to come and sit at the table because there might be questions for you. Thank you. Do I need to put her on there? Okay, thank you. LCAP goal 3, and the goal is about communication and collaboration. We heard from our constituents that we need to know about our schools. We need to know about the good work we're doing. We need to know about our students. We need to know about program opportunities. And we need it to have it be accurate and timely. And we heard that from many sources. And so this goal is very much about that work. So our first portion of our LCAP goal 3 is about, I wanted to share with you some of our photos. Our first photo is, that's actually one of our DLAC training meetings, and so the parents are actually getting some instruction. I believe that's Kim Louie sharing with them some data at one of their meetings, and so the parents are learning about that data. Our second picture down below is our Family Literacy Institute. Those are our trainers, and so you see some of our staff, but you also see that there are 3 parents there. They are part of that presentation team, and so that's where they went to go get trained over the summer. So our parent leadership and education opportunities, we utilize the parent education framework, and it provides us with guidance to an effective parent involvement to close our achievement gap. As you know, that's a concern that we need to pay attention to. One area that's critical is our leadership opportunities that are provided for our parents, and we do that through decision-making councils and advisory groups, such as our superintendent's parent council, our DLAC, and those are district-level functions, and then our school site councils and our ELAC, or English Learner Advisory Committee, at our site levels. And so those provide opportunity for parents to be leaders and to share with us what's going on at their school and give us their insights. But they also, they share a lot of the communication back and forth, so they are a conduit from us to the larger parent groups, but then also they funnel information to us. Another area from the parent engagement framework is about building capacity. And we've focused on training our parents at our Family Leadership Institute, our Parent Involvement Academy. And then there's some program-specific training. So you see, for example, like our College Readiness and AVID. They host AVID nights for their parents. The Mind Growers folks, the Gate family, so very specific to an activity. And then another area is about access and equity, assuring that our parents have critical information, such as the college and career readiness pieces. And we've done that in various ways. Some of our school sites host nights specific to either groups or to the wide campus. And then as a district, we've hosted a college night. We've targeted our student groups in various places. So you see our Gate Family Night. You see some of our English Learner training pieces. And then also with technology, we've had opportunities for parent technology nights on both sides of town so we can introduce parents to the technology that their students are using within their schools. Additionally, 2 of our schools are piloting the Power My Learning initiative, and so I'll talk about that a little bit more with the in the technology portion, but that's an opportunity. It's really about educating our parents on how to use technology safely, how to support their students using it while they're at home. So that's a lot of that portion of our goal 3. Additionally, we've worked very hard on parent communication, and I want to commend Gina Ward for this work. She's probably the go-to person on almost everything on that list. She's worked very hard to get the messages out timely, and she uses many sources to do that, and our principals and staff have supported her. I think I have the number one tweeter sitting over in the corner over there, sharing lots of things that happen at our school sites. Parents are appreciative of that, that even if it's not their student in the picture, they're appreciative to know what's going on at their school or other school sites, and so they do link in. So our communication is readily available to our parents through a variety of formats. It's accessible to parents, and our language is spoken at home, so each of our pages do translate over to the languages that we use. And the past few years, we've increased our translation services. We now have a second full-time Spanish translator, which we had added last school year. And this school year, we have made our Chinese translator part-time, who was part-time, into full-time, so we've increased those services. So we are able to support the parents much more readily and, like, at parent conferences and IEPs and things. So we're grateful to have those increased services. Additionally, there's all those opportunities for getting messages and getting information. So you can see lots of numbers up there as well. So that's goal three. Are there any questions or comments about goal three?
Training opportunities for the parents, how do you determine which parents get to attend those events?
I'm going to pass it over to Sylvia. Pull the mic out.
So, for instance, for the DLAC training, it's open for all parents to come. We have one rep that comes from every school. But really, it's open to all parents. So our DLAC representatives, especially when we're having a training, they go back, and part of their responsibility is to go back to the school site at their meeting and share what our next training is and our next topics are. In terms for GATE, is the GATE identified parents. We have several meetings throughout the years to talk about specific topics. And then, of course, the school sites have their own training that they have at the school site specifically.
What about, like, the Parent Involvement Academy? Is that one open to everybody in the Family Leadership Institute?
The Parent Involvement Academy, that's something that we have a consortium with other districts. So we have a limited number that could go to that. In fact, we have one of the highest numbers because we ask for about 150 parents. Other districts take 30 or 80 or 100, depending. And we usually give it each school site, you know, the equal amounts. And then we also give the DLAC and the Superintendent's Council and also our FRC.
Every school is allowed an allocation.
Mm-hmm.
And the Family Leadership Institute,
that's something that's new this year. And basically, we were looking at how do we promote leadership with our parents. That's part of our framework for engaging parents. And we were hoping to have an opportunity for parents to train other parents. So we started with our DLAC reps because it was very expensive. So we took our DLAC president and our DLAC vice president. And then we took, I believe that was the secretary of our DLAC. And they're right now currently training at the school sites. And Kim, Steve, and I are there for support, but pretty much they do the training. And our goal is to, of course, send other parents and for them to go to other school sites to do training. But for this is their first go-around. We thought they would feel safe at their school site with their parents, but they're very excited about going to other schools and bringing other parents in.
I also wanted to address the Family Leadership Institute because that FLI was part of a federal grant that we wrote, and it was to engage our English learner parents primarily. It was an ELD grant that we had written on the federal scale, and that was going to provide the funding to ramp this up, and we were not awarded that particular grant. But we did want to still send a pilot group of parents for the training, which is where that picture is, and then to determine how do we scale it up, because it is this FLI is one that is very costly. And so without the support of the federal grant, we weren't sure how we can scale it up or to maintain it. Our Title I funds paid for the initial training, which is the most expensive part of it. But then how do we sustain it and grow it is still something that we're looking at. But we wanted to pilot this year to see what the level of success and parent interest was.
Question about the parent communication. What is there a home link parent portal? The number of 3,701. Is it supposed every parent has that or how?
Go ahead. You got it. Go ahead.
So I just want to make sure I understand the question. So you're asking about the parent portal? The parent portal gives parents access to their grades, all of their attendance data, on a daily basis.
Every parent has access to the portal, but there's only 3,701. So I think it's kind of low comparing to others. The parent link, the mobile app, with 5,673. That's not okay, but one-third of our population.
Yeah, so that's a good point. And so as we roll out data confirmation this summer, mm-hmm. which requires every parent to have a HomeLink account, you will see that number dramatically increase. Mm-hmm. So we're working this semester to get every parent a HomeLink account to prepare for that mm-hmm. that additional data confirmation piece.
Okay. Add to that a parent needs one account. They might have multiple students, but they only need one account to get to all five, seven children.
I do want to talk how we scaled up.
Sure. So last year we moved all of the teachers to using Aries as their gradebook of record so that we were allowing parents that may have kids in different schools and different teachers one portal instead of having to learn two different or three different systems to access their grades. So last year the expectation was that all teachers moved to that. And so following on the heels of that, we're working with parents to get all of their accounts this year, by the end of this year, and then adding data confirmation, which will allow the parents to go online, and instead of filling out every year the enrollment form with their new information, they'll use this account to update address, phone number, demographic information.
So that portal is for parents only, it's not for students?
Correct, it's for parents.
I have a couple of questions. Following up on Mr. Chen, I was looking at those numbers also, and I realize that, like Parent Link, one principal might send out a message, so you'd only get people responding from that school versus the entire population. Do you keep track by school as to how many parents are accessing, like Parent Link and these other websites? Because I'm just curious, like, are we getting good response from Hurley as well as from Telesis, or does it fall off on some schools?
Yes. So all of these we can provide by school.
Okay.
We do watch each account. Gina watches all the accounts and where if there might be an access issue or maybe a training issue. And so she's gone out to like PTAs and things like that to try to increase numbers where there haven't been numbers.
And I've noticed in like even one of the reports we have tonight that I was reading, it says no computer at home. What do we do to communicate with those families that have no computer at home?
That's a problem. And some of them, the app, works on your smartphone. You can get the Aries on your smartphone as well. Sorry.
I forgot. I don't have the microphone. the portal and the HomeLink and all that the app is all accessible on a smartphone. And so many parents do use it that way, even the parents who have a computer at home, because I think it's easier to get to it there.
Have we ever did a survey asking mm-hmm. which parents don't have or which families don't have computers at home or smartphones?
You're in the process.
Right. Yeah. So one of the LCAP actions this year is to implement a district-wide survey for students. We standardized our exit survey last year, and this year we're going to expand that to the grade 3 through 8 and 11. And that will be one of the items we ask, a lot of background information on technology access at home, their use of technology at home, because we haven't asked that in the district. Unless I'm not aware of any data we have on that yet. Part of the reason the ParaMy Learning was so attractive is that it starts to close that digital access gap at home. But it is data that we need to gather, and we're working on that this semester by the end of May to have that initial baseline survey data from students.
To clarify on your question earlier, or the earlier part of the question, the Blackboard communication system is the caller. And so if a parent wants, or if a principal wants to remind everybody that it's Valentine's Day tomorrow and we can wear red, that's what they would use as the caller, and they do reach a significant number of parents and families that way. And individual teachers can call their families. It's, you know, whatever. They can scale it to all of that.
Okay, and then, you have on here three councils under the parent leadership opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
How are those selected, those parents?
Do you want to answer that?
So for the DLAC, it's one representative from each school, so they get selected from the parents. So at the school side, at the beginning of the school year, they have an ELAC meeting, and at the ELAC meeting, they vote for their school side representative and an alternate. Sometimes we have more than two that come, even two got elected. They bring more people in. Usually, because I always tell them, bring your friend, because I know if they come with their friend, they'll continue to come more. And then for the ELAC, it's the same thing at the sites. They get selected by parents of English learners. For the school site council, that's an actual, all the schools send out a flyer or information for parents to let them know when they have a position available on the school, at the school site council. Because usually the school site council, if you're a school site council member, you're there for 2 years, and then you could either continue to be one or you could give the opportunity to someone else. But the school site council meetings, they're open to everyone to attend. We have some community members that attend at Nogales High School, I know for a fact, and there's others that attend too.
And then the superintendent's parent advisory, there are two parents selected from each school to participate in the superintendent parent advisory committee.
I just have one more question. In your survey, would it be useful for you to ask the parents if they know that they can access these things over their cell phone rather than the fact that they don't have a computer?
Yes, that would be good.
And they do.
I just wanted to mention, as part of our DLAC training, we have a plan to actually make sure that at least our DLAC parents have the training, and if they don't, that's something that we're working on. Dr. Kalela and I met at the beginning of the school year and planned out what were some of the things, the needs that the parents have, because the DLAC was very interested in technology and getting training. So that's one of our goals for them, to make sure they're all aware of all those application.
At one of the parents' technology meetings, I know almost every parent has a computer, but they don't have the internet.
Yes, that's an issue, is the access. And then at the parent tech night, we do train on the parent link and the home link and all of those things, so that is some sessions that they can go to. So we've had quite a few parents participate in that. Oh. She doesn't get to.
Sorry.
All right, any more goal three questions?
Just a comment on the list. It's very nice. I went to the Avid Learning Night, and there were lots of parents there, and I see that would be the first one, college readiness. But excellent job. I think Roland's on the right path. Yay.
I have one last final question. For the parent training opportunities, all these, do you review or evaluate the result after that, number of attendance and what the parents get, and for improvement?
Part of one of the requirements of the DLAC is that we do a needs assessment for what our parents need, so that when we're providing training, we have certain legal requirements that we need to inform parents, but the main the main point of the DLAC is for them to tell us what their needs are and that we provide them with that. So we do it by a needs assessment, and usually there'll be different people from Ed Services that come. I know Mr. Chang has come to talk about Avid, Brian has come to talk about technology, and Mr. Jensen has come to talk about special ed.
Thank you to my tech assistant. Goal number four, remember, has two facets. It's a fiscal responsibility and facilities. And the first piece of that is to responsibly manage and allocate our financial resources to maximize our students' educational experiences. And again, to be good stewards of our money and use it wisely. The second part of that is to develop options, plans, and agreements to provide adequate, safe, and clean facilities for both short-term and long-term so our students are, again, effectively housed. You see in our picture there. Now, I know you expected to see that fabulous picture of Nogales with its, you know, beautiful facade, and we had quite the discussion in Ed Services about that, but we use that picture everywhere. But we felt that the students using their iPads was really kind of the culmination of what that means, is that we have spent a lot of dollars on technology. We want kids to use it. We see kids using it. They have the appropriate furniture for their small group, and they're in a classroom that is very conducive to that. And so I think that's kind of the real point of this goal. It's not so much about that, you know, I know we vacuum to the carpets regularly, which, you know, I hope we do, but it's really about our kids learning in a place where they can do that. And so we left that, we chose that picture. They are, I believe they're second graders, and I can't remember which school site they're. Oh, yeah. They might be first graders. I think they're first graders, though. I think the kids, I think I recognize this. First or second, though. And they're using iPads, so I know they're at least K-1 or 2, so that for sure. Yeah. Got that one down. All right. And so moving into our LCAP 4 actions, our maintenance of our facilities, there have been, when you think about the fact that we're, maintaining facilities, that's not really sexy to say, oh, yeah, you know, we cleaned the carpets or we, you know, did whatever, but I want to hand or give kudos to our maintenance department. Our schools look really great. We get much less complaints about the, you know, facilities and what they look like and what they've done. They shared with us a list of all the projects that they have done, and they have been very busy bees. So lots of district-wide and site-specific actions. We've replaced water heaters. We have painted sometimes, you know, because there's graffiti, but then also regular maintenance painting. We've done kitchen remodels. They have done a lot of stormwater work because, you know, we anticipated the rains, and then they've been supportive as the rains have come and then as more rains have come. They've done fencing, both replacement and then also additional fencing. They've done some roofing projects. So every aspect of the facilities have been improved, and so there's lots of maintenance and support for that. On our technology side, we've updated our technology, so we continue to do infrastructure upgrades. So our LAN, which is the school site network, and the WAN, which is the big wide district network, both of those or all of those have received upgrades continually. We have increased our access points. We've added 48 access points to our campuses, which is quite a lot when you think multiple sites or multiple many classrooms are getting on each of the access points. And just to give you an idea, we have added over 4,000 devices to our network. And so I think the fact that they all get on and there aren't glitches with them getting on, I think that's kudos to our technology department and the upgrades. And then we have increased our staffing by 5 folks as well, so much needed in the department to increase that support for that. We, as I said, we've added 4,000 devices, and they have gone out in various forms. Most of them have been in classroom access sorts of ways, so in carts, not necessarily computer labs that I sign up for on Tuesday at 10, but they're in classrooms consistently, either on a rotation basis where I share them with maybe one or two other teachers, or they're assigned to my classroom and I can use them at will, and we are seeing teachers using them. So lots of technology going on in our classrooms. And so LCAP, the maintenance of the facilities and our technology and all that LCAP, you know, and having our budget and all of that is a very big process. However, in the LCAP, it's a very small piece because it's sort of odd to put it in the LCAP, which aren't funded functions necessarily. So if there's any questions, Mr. Flores wants to answer them all, I know.
As far as the maintenance department, so many work orders. It's amazing that they can get it all done. They're doing a great job. And then you mentioned upgraded technology. As we visit the classrooms, I've noticed a lot more technology, and they all are working. The Minds Math program, Gigi, I went into several classrooms that all the students were able to sign on and do that, whereas other students, I know, when I was a teacher, we had to wait to go to the computer lab, so we weren't able to do it so often. And it was so nice to see all the kids engaged in having everything, as well as writing and all of that. So when you say 4,000 devices, I see them out there in the classrooms, which is great.
And I want to add, out there and being used, they're not sitting in rooms or sitting in their carts. They're burning their batteries every day.
Do we have a master schedule when all of the schools will be up to the same standard as to access to computers in classrooms?
Are you talking about devices or are you talking about network?
Devices.
No. Yes, we do have a district plan, and that was something we can share with the board again. It's probably been 6 months to a year when we shared it the last time, might have even been during this process a year ago. So we do have a tech rollout plan where this year was very specific instructional initiatives came with those initiatives. If you're part of the COP, part of the Achievement Made Possible, looking at very specific instructional initiatives supported by technology. And then what we had shared previously was there's a grade level rollout planned with odd numbered grades and even numbered grades. We are having an internal discussion now whether or not that is the best plan to continue with for the 17-18 and 18-19 school year, or do we need to continue it around, again, instructional initiatives or those teachers that are ready, because nobody has an interest in having technology in their classroom sit idle and dust. So we want to make sure it's being used, as Mrs. Friedman has said, she's seeing in her classrooms. So there is not complete equity across our schools, because our schools have their own site budgets that they're able to allocate based on site needs and site decisions from their school site council and from their staff and faculty. And so some have and PTA provides input. So there are some schools that have more devices than other schools, but we have created consistency about, this is the work that our team did last year, is what devices can be purchased for our grade levels. And so that's where the board had taken action and how Teresa knew that it had to be a primary grade, because TK2 are iPads, and then we have the 11-inch Chromebooks for upper elementary and middle, and the 14-inch Chromebooks for our high school classrooms. So we have consistency in devices that helps our IT department. And then so even if sites are purchasing them or PTA are providing the dollars for purchases of technology, it's around a consistent format or type of device.
The reason I'm asking is that I went to the demonstration they had here for the purchase of new materials. And at all grade levels, they were demonstrating the fact that the materials is integrated with technology. And then when I go out to the schools, I notice some schools aren't as fully
implemented.
The technology isn't the same in all the schools. And I know from my opinion that I would hope that we would give more emphasis on getting every student a computer out there, so they can make full use of these new materials that we're ordering and make that really a number one priority right now.
You also, though, have to, we wouldn't disagree in that, but you also have to remember the preparedness and readiness of our teachers to implement. And so one of the instructional initiatives that was supported by technology this year was every teacher who was piloting a textbook, the English Language Arts Adoption, K-12, was supported with the use of technology so that they could use the textbook during the pilot with fidelity, both with and without technology. Because you can fully implement the new instructional materials without the use of technology. And it's a given with 700-plus teachers, not everybody's ready to use technology. And it's not something that I don't think we all have an interest in to put a cart in a classroom that's not going to be used. And it isn't a lack of training, and it isn't a lack of availability so much as it's just they're just not ready. And sometimes it's a lot to ask. Oftentimes it's a lot to ask a teacher to learn a new textbook and learn the technology at the same time. And so we have put in a lot of professional development and options, but I think it's finding that balance, and that's why we're having some internal conversations around, do we do a grade level rollout or do we do more upon teacher readiness? Mm-hmm. And so that's the new, that's the latest discussions that we've been having with Dr. Colella and Dr. Huff.
Okay. I have a question. This is kind of an overreaching question that I'm interested in finding out in all these different areas, and it has to do with everything we're doing is for student learning. We're implementing all these programs and these ideas and this and that. But how is student learning measured as compared to a particular goal? Is there any way to do that? How do you know it's working?
So within each of the goals, if you go to the actual LCAP, there are measures that we have put in place, and many of them revolve around either interim assessments. For example, in goal 1 and 2, we use the STAR literacy, STAR math piece, STAR early literacy. The SBAC assessments as they've come online. And so those are a big piece of that. So when we talk about goals 1 and 2, we will share those measures as well, how we're doing. Additionally, within each goal, there are measurement pieces. So, for example, in goal 3, one of the measurements is about our parents using the systems that we have in place. And so it's about those numbers we reported. So it depends on what action, but overall each goal does have a series of measurements. And so if you go to the actual LCAP, and then what we need to do as well in the annual report, so when we do the final draft, we have to report about each one of those. So if we said our kids are doing this on this measure and our goal is that, did we reach it? And if we did, yeah, yes, and if not, why not? And so that's a part of that annual report as well. So that's part of the data we're collecting. Did that answer your question enough?
Yes.
Okay. I'd be happy to sit with you and walk you through each and every metric if you'd like. Okay. All right, going on to goal 5. Oops. I went really far on that one. Apparently I don't want to talk about goal 5 very much. Goal 5 is about student safety and wellness. And so the idea that our plans and our programs and our procedures will promote the health, academic, and personal support and safety of our students and our staff. The list of actions is probably shorter in this goal than compared to, say, goals 1, 2, or even 3. But the bigness of them is, it's quite a lot. And so you'll see up in the top left corner of our pictures, you see some of our counselors, and they're collaborating together. And we're actually there at, they're trying to solve a problem about a student, to be perfectly honest. We just kind of went in their meeting and took a shot. On the upper right, you see the Roland High School counselors, and they are getting some training with our CCGI trainer on how to use that system and how to pull some reports and things. In the lower left-hand picture, you see our FRC staff, and that is during one of their staff meetings. They're coming together to do some learning and collaborating. And then in the lower right, you see some of our FRC staff at one of our school sites, and they are working with parents in the community. And so that's a lot. When you see, there's a lot about the goal of supporting those pieces that aren't necessarily directly in the classroom each time, but they are big pieces that support our kids of getting to school, being in school, being safe at school, all of that. So the first piece of this, my notes here, we're providing professional development for our staff, and the biggest piece here is our positive behavior intervention and supports training. So cohort 1, our first group that began their training last year, in tier 1, the training is about creating that baseline for your school. So what are our expectations for our school? What's our behavior matrix? What are those expectations in each areas of our school? And so they'd spent the year planning, and so this school year they have implemented. So our first cohort has implemented those school-wide supports across their campuses. You see reward systems in place. If you go to Nogales, you see kids getting points. You know, you see the administrators walking around with their smartphones, and they're giving kids points, and you see tickets being handed out and that kind of thing. The cohort 1 is now working on tier 2, which is that next level. So if a kid sort of blows it, you know, I didn't pick up my trash properly, I didn't quite follow the rule, what is that support to get them to do that next best thing? And so they are working on a planning this year for implementation of tier 2 next year. Cohort 2 is where cohort 1 was a year ago, so they are working together on their matrix, they're working together on their school-wide goals and their school-wide expectations. And so that is 8 and 6 of our schools, and so next year in cohort 3, we expect to finish the rest of our schools and going into tier 1 training. And then also next year, we expect that cohort 1 will finish out with tier 3, which is for the most severe needs of our students. Additionally, we have provided discipline training about suspensions and expulsions and actually the whole discipline process. LACO was kind enough to come out and do trainings with all of our administrators. And it was a great training in that we got to have the opportunity to kind of get the overview of here's the new laws and here's new things we need to be aware of. But then there was also scenarios where we could say, what do we do with the student and how do we support them? What do you need to do legally? What can you do? What are some best practices? And then at the end of the training, we were given scenarios and folks were asked to do that as a team sitting at a table. So it was a really great training for us with some practical experience to really update our knowledge, especially regarding new laws and new expectations. Additionally, we've done a lot of work about supportive school climate. We're looking at things that support kids that have additional needs and not just in the behavior parts, although that is a very big piece of it. So continuing to work on character education regardless of where we are in the PBIS process. So we have students that are schools that do character counts, for example, and so continuing that support about what's good character and how do we, support folks. Additionally, our special education department has done a lot of work supporting their teachers and their students. The students in special ed come to us with a very wide range of needs and usually very severe, and that's why they're in special education. So how do we best support them? And so we've done a lot of professional development, both academically, so how do we support them with good practices? How do we help them access the core curriculum? But additionally, we've provided coaches for the teachers as well, and so they work with them on instructional practices, just like our regular teacher coaches do, but also providing behavior support, because many times with the learning disability, sometimes we see behaviors attached to that, and sometimes that's a learned behavior, and sometimes that's part of the condition. And so providing behavior supports and continuing to do that out with our regular education students and teachers as well. So those coaches will cross over and help support our teachers with that. And then we've revamped our student study team process so that it's much more efficient for our teachers and parents to get help for students before they're identified into special education. So what are those places where we can provide systematic supports for kids who are struggling and getting them their help they need? Part of this goal also addresses our nutrition services, so making sure that we're feeding our kiddos and we're feeding them well. And so we've just recently piloted our breakfast program. We're seeing some numbers from that coming in just most recently at our last board meeting, and just making sure that kids are available to that. And I'll tell you, when we have our pizza lunches, that's probably the number one topic is about lunch. So we get lots of peace. And, in fact, we had our DLEC LCAP input meeting the other day, and that was a topic, is there's always ways to improve our lunches. And then also supporting students with attendance with our SARB and SART processes, so continuing to support parents to get our kiddos to school, improve our attendance rates, because we know if they don't come to school, they're obviously not learning. And so how do we continue to get those, especially our chronic truant or chronic absence families, how do we support them best? And so referrals to FRC, referrals to the community, and just supporting them in various ways. So here you see some of our PBIS in action. So in the middle photo, the Be Respectful, Be Responsible, and Be Ready to Learn, that is the motto out at Northam Elementary School. And what they do is they teach their behaviors based on that. So what does it look like to be respectful in the classrooms, or what does it look like to be responsible out on the playground? And you'll see on the top left that Dr. Mungia, the principal, is handing out. It looks like she's a bad kid, because it looks like she's handing her like a tardy slip or something. But it's really a student who got caught doing something good, and so she gets a little ticket for that, and they get a reward based on those tickets that they collect. And then in the top right, that's Sultana High School. Sorry, Santana. I do that. I apologize. I do it all the time. Santana High School. I lived at the other one for a while. And their acronym is about soaring like an eagle, and they have their acronym where they also support their students. And so this is an awards assembly, so the student there is receiving an award based on their SOAR motto. And then down on the bottom right, the way of the gladiator, that's what you get to do if you're at Giano. So you get to work hard, get involved, and do the right thing. One of the questions that comes up during training is the fact that, I go from Northern where I'm being respectful, being responsible, and being ready to learn, and then I show up at Giano and I have to work hard, get involved, and do the right thing. I don't think those are mutually exclusive from each other, but I think that that just puts their own school flavor on it and the expectations. And the campus, the plants are different, and so sometimes you have different rules about different things. We don't tend to have running in the playground at Giano, and so there are some things that, you just adjust based on grade level. And then over on the bottom left, you see Jaguars never quit, but they also use their cube to make sure that their behavior is right on, is moving along as well. So that's a good example of our schools taking that information and, I'm sorry, Cubs, and then they take that information and they take it to their school site and make it meaningful for their kids. And then the next big chunk of dollars goes to providing our appropriate health. I'm sorry, I skipped a page. I turned my page on accident. I'm sorry. Supporting student needs to our school counselors. We have decreased our student to counselor ratio, which sounds like a bad thing, but it's a good thing. We have less students to each counselor. And so we've continued to support those numbers through this school year. We continue, so basically our staffing had stayed stable because our secondary numbers had stayed pretty stable. In addition to this, we have introduced our CCGI, our California College Guidance Initiative. And so part of that is that students have what we call milestones in the program. And so kids have an activity that we direct them to do. And so we support them by taking them to the computer lab, or if we're in a classroom with devices, they will do that process together. And so we ensure that each kid at least meets the minimum milestones. And then because they have an account, the kids can poke around wherever they want. So just because as a seventh grader I'm supposed to do the student profiler, which is sort of an interest survey of what I might want to do and what you start that process of sort of deciding on your career, you can poke around and search colleges or do whatever you'd like, but we expect students to do the profiler. We also expect our seventh graders to do the career survey. Our eighth graders start to work on college lists, so they start evaluating where it is that they'd like to go to college. It would be a best suit for them. In our 11th grade, and remember that this is a two-year-old program, and so some of our students didn't do it as 7th and 8th graders. So our 11th graders completed the career inventory, and they've also done a search for careers, and they've done they create sort of a portfolio of information, and so we've asked them to do that. In 12th grade, we've also done that college list, and the 12th graders this year were able to apply to the CSUs online. And so they can do that through the system, and their information came over from Aries, so they didn't actually have to complete as much information. And then they also could look at programs and majors and do some work with that. So those are the expectations at a minimum of the milestones, but students are able to get on the system and do other things as well. And then you can see as part of our activities, we had the opportunity for kids to ensure that they can be college ready, so access to A to G classes, so opening up those doors and supporting students in various ways. A big piece of that is increasing our AVID numbers, which we will talk about with goal two. And then we had our first district college night, so we had many colleges and universities there, and it was really hard to tell how many colleges and universities were there because there were so many of them they had to spill out into the quad area. But also, there were so many parents and families and students that were there, it was hard to see all the tables. So it was a very successful night. And so thank you to the counselors and to Mr. Chang for supporting that work and having that happen for our first night. And so we'll switch over, and Nogales will have their turn next year. But we've done a lot to support our students in their college and career goals. The other piece on goal five is about safety, and so providing appropriate health services. So we've continued to support our clinic services, our FRC. Most of that work is funded through grant resources, but we do support it with some of our staffing. Again, our nutrition services and some pieces with that. Our homeless students, which are funded under the McKinney grant, but we also supplement some of those services. And then our Medi-Cal Collaborative, which also funds some of our outreach services, and both in the clinic and then also in at school sites. And then our providing support for at-risk students. So we continue to offer ME supports for our TK6 students at our site. So those are small group counseling, friendship groups, buddy groups, those kinds of things. Spirit counseling and Zone 78, those are more intense one-on-one or small group counseling situations from outside supports. And then our elementary school counselor tries to monitor and work closely with our most at-risk students, and it's mostly, she does a lot of group counseling and support, and then a lot of monitoring of the other pieces. And then our morning break clubs provide our parents with opportunities for education, but also ways to get support. So they ask questions, and we dive in and help them out with our FRC staff. Any questions about goal number five?
Okay, it says supporting student needs through school counselors. Mm-hmm. And how many counselors do we have in the elementary schools?
We have the one that's funded through the FRC.
I see that one. That's one for all the elementary schools?
Yes.
Do we have, what is the Spirit Counseling?
Spirit Counseling is an outside vendor that provides mental health services and counseling services for students. And it's on a referral basis.
It's a cooperative agreement that we have. And so they use interns as well as having school counselors. And that's something that our elementary school counselor also helps to support. And the schools know how to access and use that. And it's primarily for upper elementary students or an elementary, primary.
Yeah, what they do is they recognize some of the – maybe Maria wants to answer this. Wait, give us the microphone.
So the Spirit Counseling is actually for the high school students. The Spirit Counselors work with Nogales, Roland, and Santana, and it is on a referral basis. The Zone 7-8 is for the 7th and 8th graders. The EMHI, we fondly call them the Emmys, are TK through 6, and then our elementary counselor works with the elementary mental health individuals on a regular basis to ensure that they're trained and they know what they're doing with the kids. That's where we are right now with the counseling.
And are we looking into interns to come to our district?
We are. We have some MOUs, and we are working on, we have a brand new FRC coordinator, Laurel, and one of the things she's doing right now is conducting a needs assessment. She's looking at, where we are now, what we've been doing, and making a plan moving forward.
Okay, I have one more question. You mentioned the career survey, and I was wondering if you could explain the interest inventory completion, how the students do that, and explain the percents.
Well, it's the percentages, the completion rate based on the students who are taking it. So 7th and 8th grade percentages based on the number of 7th and 8th graders at that school. And then the high school is 9th through 12. But this year we only had the 11th and 12th graders at the high schools completed, as this is phase 2 of our implementation. So the middle schools, 7 and 8, all the students took a milestone for the fall, and then for 11th and 12th, they took a milestone for the fall as well.
So what's the procedure for the 7th and 8th graders taking the test? Only because I saw the percentages, and some schools had 100% and some did not.
Yeah, so every school went about how the implementation was very different depending on how involved the teachers got or how involved the counselors got. But the main task was usually a coordination between the counselor and the teachers to go into classroom time to try to get students to complete the task, or take these students out and go into a computer lab to try to complete the task. Sometimes there are challenges with that. You arrange a time and a sub is not there, or, something of that nature. A student is absent, things like that happen.
Okay, thank you.
The students in high school and the students in elementary school, the way they interact with the teachers are very different. The elementary school kids, they have a room, they interact with their own teacher every day. So the teacher knows every student, and if they have strange behavior, unusual behavior, the teacher knows right away. But high school, they don't have a teacher watching maybe all the time. And how we handle this, because sometimes I noticed in high school, sometimes the problem is when a student has unusual behavior, angry or depressed, and anyone responsible for take care of these things, help them, or how
Yes, we build relationships. That's a huge focus for all of our secondary principals. And so that's a message that's embedded within what they try to talk to their staffs about. But in regards to, day to day, every single minute, we rely on, at the secondary level, we rely obviously on the communication between counselors, with school staff, with teachers who have their 150 to 175 students daily, that interaction is key. And, you know, just from my experiences, but I don't want to talk too much about it, but and PBIS is a huge component in that, in making sure that you build those kind of relationships with the students regularly and that you are able to intervene on the student's behalf when we find something that is in need for the student.
And to very directly answer that question, when we have lunch and eat way too much pizza with kids, we have a set of questions that we ask them, and we very much ask that question about, do they feel like there's an adult on campus that if they have an issue, whether it's academic or personal or social or whatever, that they feel that they're connected with and that they can go to with an issue. And we very directly ask that question. Many times we hear it's their counselor. Many times we hear it's a teacher. Sometimes it's even a support staff. But overwhelmingly, most of our kids say that there's somebody who's they feel attached to at the school site. And we've heard that from middle school and high school students each of the years that we have met with them, you know, since we've been doing the LCAP. So our representative groups, and they're not the kids we talk to aren't, you know, the cool ASB kids or whatever. We get the cross-section of the school, and they very much share that they have somebody they connect. And it seems like it would be easy to fall through the cracks that I've got six different teachers, and I show up, and I sit down at my desk, and I don't really say much, and I get up, and I go. But the teachers are very aware of their students, and, you know, are they sort of being their normal selves or not, or, you know, something's going on. They're very aware of that. So, yeah, but they do feel very connected to school.
As far as the kids for the pizza, you said that these get different kids. How do you know you're getting kids that are either maybe being bullied or, they're having trouble in school?
So what we do is we ask the principals to give us 25 to 30 students at the elementary and middle school and about 50 kids at the high school that look like their school. So demographically, they look like that. But we also ask for, you know, a foster student. We ask for a homeless student. We make sure we have English learner students. So we cover the gamut of programs. And the variety of academics. I mean, so it looks like their school. It's that bell curve of their school. And as we talk to them, I had a student last year say, you know what, I was the bully. I was the kid who was the bully, but my counselor, you know, kept meeting with me when I was behaving, you know, not so great. And I figured out that that wasn't a good idea. So they're very open and honest. And we do hear from some of our students that it hasn't always been rosy, but they do get the help when they need it. And, you know, so I think they're being pretty open about that. We find the kid who's not always, it would be easy for them not to be connected, and they are.
Mr. Chen, in response to the question about the counselors as well, Rowan Unified really does support students well, especially at the counselor level, at the secondary. The average counselor-to-student ratio in the state of California is about 940 students to one. In Rowan Unified, our contract, which the governing board has supported for many years, is 420 to one. So our student-to-counselor ratio is about half of what it is in many of the schools in California. According to the California Department of Education, the average counselor ratio in the nation is 477 to 1, and as you can see, we're substantially lower than that even. So we're 420 to 1 at the secondary level.
And the actuality is we're actually a little bit below that because, you know, you have to hire a whole person, so we're a little bit less than 420.
You know, on the counselors, I'm learning that we have educational counselors and we have social support counselors. Are these numbers educational counselors? Or?
Yes, okay. They're high school guidance.
Okay, so for the social supports, that's where we use Spirit, Opportunity, Serve, and all and those other programs?
So as an educational facility, our primary purpose is educating students, but looking at both social, emotional, academic, and behavioral. And so our counselors are equipped through their PPS credential to do all of those things. So they aren't just an academic counselor, although that is their primary purpose, being that they are working in an educational setting. But as you interact and work with our counselors, they understand that students have social, emotional, and behavioral needs as well, And they do address those as well. They don't look at a student who has an emotional issue, a behavioral issue, and turn them away. They still, because so much of that also ties into academic success. When you look at a PPS credential, you can have a PPS credential that specializes in social work, et cetera. But as you're working in our programs, we do have some intervention counselors that have different PPS, which is pupil personnel services. Yes. I casted myself there for a minute. And so they have different emphases through their schooling, but they all have a broad background. What we don't do in school is therapy. That is referred out. And so even when you look at our ME and our SPIRIT and our Zone 78, it is not therapy. And so if a student needs one-on-one with like an MFCC, an MFT, et cetera, then they are referred out to someone who has a different level of expertise. So we do, with all of those groups up there, and even our school counselors, we do small group, we do one-on-one conversations, and we also can assess students to determine whether or not we think that they'll be a harm to themselves or others. We call in a team that can come in and help with that assessment, and then though we do refer out, because we don't do therapy.
The other part on here is that we have safety. And do we have anything that addresses the environmental safety? Or we don't have a risk manager now, but when we get a risk manager on, I know in the past they've done more HR function. Would they be pulled with that person? Is there any plan to pull that person into Goal 5?
Yeah, that would be their whole role. Yes, that would be where they would live, is Goal 5.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And a little bit in Goal 4 because it, you know, pertains to those schools.
Okay, thank you.
I have a few questions. They're not real long ones. When you went to the LACO training, how many went to that?
LACO came to us.
And well, how many were trained?
Every one of our administrators were trained. Good. So we did two different sessions so we didn't empty out a school, you know, of all their administrators. So we did two different day-long sessions.
So the principals?
Principals and assistant principals went. And our district office site staff as well.
Okay. And then regarding the... I wrote my questions as I went by. Do we have anybody actively beating the bushes for grants now to help with some of these counseling
yes, we
pieces?
Mm-hmm. I will say, though, that the grants were a little bit more plentiful about 10 years ago for that kind of work, and so the opportunities for grants aren't as lucrative or as many as they had been prior. Just that's where we are as the bigger picture outside of our district.
How do you find them?
So we do have a grant committee here, and they meet. Sylvia's a part of that committee as well. And so Nancy Ballantyne is a lead as a retiree, runs that. As the board knows, we used to have a grant writer that was on retainer, and we have released that grant writer from retainer, but still have a relationship with that grant writer should we need assistance. When you look at counseling grants, most specifically, most of those are federal grants now. There are not a lot of local or state grants. And so part of the committee's role and part of what I do is peruse the California Department of Ed site as well as the federal government sites for looking for, because those are the larger grants. And as I just mentioned earlier, we did apply for a federal grant. And in that case, there's a specialty grant writer that assists us with writing those. And so we can handle the smaller local grants, and we have support to do that. There are three different grant writing companies that we can seek out that know our district, and we have built relationships with them for larger state grants. And then when you get on a federal level, then we generally go with whomever has that area of expertise working with at the federal component.
That we that send out notifications about different grants available. So I'm sure organizations that all of our administrators belong to, they get a lot of grant information.
Yeah, and the grant writers send it to us too.
Mm-hmm. Will we be working with the safety committee, and that would be under the LCAP Goal 5?
Yes, the district safety committee works under that auspices. Again, it's one of those places where it's some of the actions under Goal 5, but the work sort of despite the LCAP would continue.
And I just want a clarification. So if a student in elementary school is having a lot of trouble crying because of something at home, really terrible, drastic, a team comes to help. Who is the team, and is it one of them a counselor?
So it depends. I mean, I don't have a full scenario. And so there's a PET team that comes in if we think that student is of harm to themselves or others. We have a team. We have our own crisis counselors. So if we have a student or a situation, we had a very unfortunate situation where a high school student passed away. They had elementary and middle school siblings. And so Scott Jensen worked with our crisis counseling team to be able a resource to students in those three schools in our district, to both students and staff. And so when we have situations like that, one of us contacts Scott, who then helps, and Mari as well, and we push out our own district staff. We also have Hacienda La Puente staff, because they're part of our SELPA, will come and assist us with some of that crisis counseling. If you have a student, an elementary student, who is in crisis at the moment, in tears, is upset, then the first person that will interact with that student is the principal. And that principal will meet with the student, try to figure out what's happening. The teacher generally will alert, or the noon duty, or somebody who sees that student is upset. And then they're able to assess, kind of what's happening. And then we can, that depending on what the situation is, could be anything, then we would determine what level of intervention is needed at that particular time. Might be being a part of a social skills group, with Emmy, might call Sochi in to come in, who's our elementary counselor, to provide some assistance. It might be that we need to call the PET team. It might be that they're part of, grieving from this process, so we call in our crisis counseling team. So there are a variety of different resources depending on what the situation is. And oftentimes the principal can talk that student through whatever crisis that they're having at that moment, because they just need an ear and somebody to cry with.
Okay. And lastly, the statistics as far as counselors. Is there any way to get the elementary statistics by the state and then our district to see the difference?
I have not seen statistics broken down between elementary and secondary.
Because I know there's a lot of counselors in the high school level. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering what the state would be doing for elementary.
The CD, what I was reporting was what the CDs.
Overall, all K through 12.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the microphone over there.
Might know the microphone.
Okay, so goal number 6. This is our goal about leadership, and we know that, as an exemplary school district, that we have to have strong leadership at all levels, not just with our superintendent, but all the way down through our classrooms and down to our classified staff. We want to make sure that leadership then has the vision for providing that world-class educational experience for our students and constantly improving our student achievement, constantly working to be a better place for students. And so we didn't have a really good picture for this one. We decided that the logo was it, because it was all about the whole district and what we're doing and the work that we're continuing to do. And so that was our photo that we came up with. So some of our actions, the first one is providing professional development. And again, this is based about leadership. We do lots of professional development lots of ways. Already in goals 3, 4, and 5, we've shared a lot about training that we have done with staff. But additionally, we have very particularly pointed out classified staff and certificated staff leadership. Dennis has coordinated a classified leadership academy and a certificated leadership academy, both of which have about 30 or so, a few more than that, participants in each of them. And they go through a series of sessions that are voluntary. And they learn all about the district and what that means and leadership practices and strategies. So, and then the other part, too, is really creating that collaboration across the participants, and I think that's been very valuable. We are on our second round of Classified Leadership Academy and our first round of Certificated, and I think they've both been very successful. I've had the opportunity as part of many people sitting in this room, to present and work with the groups, and they self-volunteer to be a part of it, but we are getting our best and our brightest to come to that, so that's very reassuring as we look forward to future positions. In addition, with our classified staff, we've had the opportunity to do a January professional development, both last January and this January, with a variety of topics. They've had a keynote speaker, and they've had an opportunity to work. I might be in one position, but I might be aspiring to another position. So looking at some pieces where I might be able to learn about that next position, either a skill or a piece that we've worked together on. Additionally, they had opportunities to work within their class of what they're doing now, and so we've done things like Aries training and Google training and things that apply to lots of our job classes. Our certificated teachers have an opportunity that during the year we have many professional developments, but additionally in January we had an opportunity for professional development where probably about half of our teachers came to. And then, again, we've had opportunities for teachers to be on councils and be part of the leadership. So we have a teacher advisory council for elementary. We have opportunities that are secondary based on subject area where they give us input about professional development, the needs of the groups. And so a lot of our professional development decisions have been based on the feedback from those groups. Additionally, they're the ones that are stepping up and providing it. For example, this last week we had many of our sixth grade teachers out for training, our elementary teachers out, and for science training, for the NGSS training, and it was all done by our secondary science teachers. So they have felt the need that they want to spread the wealth and share that information, but it was done by them and with the support of our science coach, Jacob. So that's an example of us, you know, really cultivating our folks and growing them to be leaders. Additionally, we want to, let's see, there's some other ones on here. Our district leadership team and our principal leadership development teams, we continue to meet with our principals monthly and offer opportunities for professional growth, so we work together as a team as we work to continue to improve instruction. We have coaching support for our teachers, but also for our administrators, and Frank and Miriam have done a great job supporting them in those endeavors. We have many of our schools that have gone through professional learning community training, and so they'll send a leadership team to the training, usually in Vegas or somewhere far away, and then they bring that back and work with their staff and lead their departments or their grade levels through that process of growth. And that's a great way for the staff to come together, collaborate about the data and about how their students are doing. So back to your question about some of our data points and what we're watching. We've had opportunities for educational tech leadership. We've sent many teachers to Q, but we've also had teachers step up for our community of practice. I think it was yesterday or the day before, one of our school sites had their own mini Q. That some of the teachers that have been very involved in the technology, and they got support from other sites as well, and Tricia, to come together and train their fellow staff on technology. And so that was a grassroots effort from there. And so proof that our efforts are working to create leadership and create opportunities and open those doors for our teachers. Additionally, part of this goal is about providing our highest quality staff for all positions, so working to enhance our interview process. Mr. Bixler and his staff have done a great job of working through that, of how we're recruiting and hiring and selecting our folks to be the best people that we can have, and then establishing relationships with our university. I know he's reached out to all of our local universities to work on staff for both administrative and teaching positions. And I do have a really great picture. These are our coaches. And I know it looks like a crazy picture. It looks like they're in drama class because they kind of are. We had opportunity to train our coaches on the coaching process and how to best work with teachers and make it most effective. And so two of our coaches are modeling a practice that they had learned, and the other coaches are, okay, they're kind of laughing because that's where they are in the conversation, but they were modeling or watching for the cues and watching for the strategy pieces. And so the group behind at the end got the opportunity to give feedback to the two that were practicing their coaching strategies. So a very effective practice to continue our coaches' growth as they continue to be leaders across our district as well. Another big piece of this goal is about celebrating the achievements of our students and staff and making sure that we support all of our diverse population. And so you have seen at your board meetings, because we have many opportunities for you to shake hands and take pictures at our board recognitions. But we've also seen an increase in our school-based recognition. So our PBIS, there's lots of informal opportunities for recognition, but there's also opportunities at monthly assemblies or, you know, flag raising or, you know, the Friday piece they gather together at to recognize students for doing good things. And so sometimes it's about PBIS and behavior, but it's also about achievements and success. Our RUSD showcase, if you remember our first year, it was very much about our student, or, you know, just our program and our pamphlet on our table. And as, if you were there just a few weeks ago, it was very much about celebrating who we are as a district and all the great things that happen at each of our schools. And even though it's sort of a way to share with the community about who we are, it's also a chance for us to share the great things that are going on across. And so I think there's a lot of cross-pollination that occurs at that event. Our school spotlight at the board meeting as well, it gives us a chance to recognize a school and the work that they're doing, both from the staff perspective and principal, but also a student and a parent. And then creating that culture of appreciation. We have lots of ways where we have opportunities as staff to appreciate others. And so trying to sow those seeds about creating that culture where we do appreciate the hard work that folks are doing. And so to recognize all of you and all your picture-taking skills, or picture-being-in skills, we have some of our recognitions, and from small groups to large groups, we have athletic teams, we have academic achievements, and then on the bottom right, we have one of our teams, one of our academic teams getting awards. So just celebrating who we are as schools, and in all the ways, it's not just academic awards, it's not just being athletic, it's not always about competition, but it's about celebrating. What did we notice?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought I missed something. Sorry. Okay. And then the last piece is about providing opportunities for collaboration between the district and community stakeholders. And I think as our Ed Services team, as we've implemented some of this, we've taken this in the broadest sense. And so working together with our teachers and creating opportunities for teachers to cross-pollinate, so making sure at articulation days we've pushed teachers together at great common grade levels but across schools so they can have some of that articulation together and create that collaboration and conversation about best practices. We've had the opportunities at various professional developments to group by various schools as opposed to, you know, training a school at a time. So creating that opportunity for collaboration, creating time for at individual sites at grade levels, so elementary teachers having common planning time. Many of them are using that time to plan together. Miriam and I had a chance today. We were at two different elementary schools as part of a monitoring visit for program improvement at two different sites, and very evident the work that the staff has done to come together to plan together, and realizing that together they have the best strategies, and they're really, you can see the evidence in their classrooms of that practice. And we see that a lot, but today it was very evident at both of the schools that we were at that they had that opportunity. And so just creating those opportunities. With our community, the State of the Schools was a very a big event for bringing in lots of facets of our community together. So we brought in business and education folks, but also faith-based groups and community organizations. And so being able to share our message about the great things that we do at schools and being able to have that conversation. I know that we were all at different tables and with different groups of people and had the opportunity to interact. And so as well as the message that we got to share lots about our schools and what's going on in the district, but having that chance to share across tables, across the groups, I think was very beneficial. Continuing our interest-based bargaining training for our district leaders and with our employee groups, I think that's been very beneficial about making sure that we're collaborative in our work. And increased participation and presence in our community. We're out at different service organizations, we're out at different community groups, and I think that's been very helpful for sending our message, but also hearing from our people that, you know, our customers. And then our LCAP community groups and student focus groups, we have plenty of opportunity to hear about what we're doing. We try to keep the questions focused to what's on the sticky note and the six goals, but oftentimes, you know, we get into various conversations about what's going on, and so we do hear those fresh ideas and fresh things that aren't necessarily just confined to those six goals. So we do have that opportunity to hear from our constituents for that. And so are there any goals about questions about goal six?
You're going to too. Visiting the schools during their planning time when the kids are at PE or the music, it's amazing to see all the grade levels working together. So that's collaboratively. It's very nice. They work very hard during that time. That's the comment that I have observed throughout the district.
Yes, they do.
I want to share some thoughts about this picture of the board organization. I think it's time for us to redesign our certificate.
Okay.
Yeah, when we use
all of
the reprint. Yeah, really big up. Because compare ours to other districts, ours are too simple.
Okay.
And I think
we would like us to fancy them up a little bit.
More fancy one.
Okay. I'd like to see them have room for all the board members to sign.
Okay. That would be nice.
Angelina's frowning.
Actually, our neighboring district has all the signatures on there.
Yeah. But they're not wet signatures.
No, they're not wet.
So we can just.
Yes. The collector
yes,
items.
And we appreciate the time that takes to do. Thank you.
To this day, I'm still getting positive feedback on the state of the schools. Mm-hmm. I tell you, that has got to be one of the highlights of this district for the community. People still talk about that. And the RUSD showcase, is just a fabulous hit, you know, each year. And then last night, Ms. Ebbenkamp did a presentation of a couple of short videos at RHCCC, mm-hmm. and that got real positive response from the group. And it was a large group there last night. So I think all those things really help sell the district. Mm-hmm.
I think we were a best-kept secret in town.
Just wanted to echo what David said. And just recently, Lynn and I were told that there was a local public official who made a statement that they had attended a variation of a showcase at another school district, and they mentioned that they went to that district's showcase thingajiggy, but that it was not as good as Roland's. And they said that out loud to a bunch of people. So that was really exciting to hear.
Thank you for that. And I will say, too, that in being at various sites in the last week, since the showcase, many parents have come to schools, part of the school tour day, but then also just coming, it's part of the enrollment process. And they're very appreciative of the showcase to just, even though they are at their home school and they're showing up at their home school, just having that understanding of who the district is and, you know, what their school has to offer in that sort of an environment. They're very appreciative of that.
Speaking of the school tour days, shouldn't that be here under LCAP Goal 6 as well?
I should put that down. Thank you. Yes, I will add that.
And too bad we had bad weather this year.
We had a decent turnout for it, though. Mm-hmm. So as we continue this process, you know, we are looking at this, the 16 to 19 LCAP plan. So remember my first graphic where I said I get confused about the dates because I keep setting foot in, you know, the old plan, the new plan. And so we are beginning the process of the review and revision. And so you have a handout. Did they get the one in their place?
No, I think I gave them all to you.
Oh, did you?
No,
I just have
them.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I do have them all. Sorry, I thought they had gotten passed out. So this is the ones that were, this is the flyer for the community. So my employee friends realize that your meetings are not on here because, you know, that would not be about the inviting the community. But we do have our ARA, ARE, and CSEA meetings scheduled as well, and we have open employee meetings as well. And so we do have all the dates here. We did have to change one of the dates, and so we're working on the location for one of the community meetings. Mm-hmm. But we are beginning that process. And so as we work through that process, keeping in mind that in the past few years we've had an opportunity to add programs or add pieces because we've had additional funds. And as we look this year, we're looking at pretty much probably static dollars, flat dollars. And so we're looking to see how we're doing and looking at tweaks and revisions. Because if we want to do something new, we have to get rid of something then. And so if there's something that's not working, obviously we're not going to continue it. But just having that conversation about how we're doing. And so the process as we get feedback will look a little more like pizza and a lot less like sticky notes. And so we actually had our DLAC meeting this last week. And we had the opportunity to have conversations in small groups, so just like we do with the students. So you can see Dr. Mitchell eating pizza, the kids are eating pizza, and she's taking notes furiously, and having that conversation. And we got some great feedback from our DLAC participants about how that went and about being able to share their questions or concerns, or instead of just sort of, you know, what do you think about Goal 2? It was about what part of Goal 2 they were very concerned about or had questions. So we're continuing to revise that process. And then the other piece, too, that I had shared is that the template will change. So if you're trying to compare the 16-19 to the 17-20 plan, it will the format will look different. The only additional content in the new format is that there will be a summary. So you don't have to read all 130 fabulous pages. They are fabulous, each and every one. But if you wanted just a quick down and dirty about it, there's an expectation of a 2 to 3 page summary of what our LCAP says and what we intend to do with it. So, you know, where our needs are, what our actions are, and what we expect to happen as a result of those actions. That piece will be an addition. The other parts are all there. They're just perhaps in a different place. And so as when we share the new draft, we will kind of walk through some of that so it's a little bit readable. So as we go into the 17 to 20 LCAP planning, we are, you know, this is that first part of that of reviewing the goals and outcomes. We have our LCAP council meeting. So our first one is this Thursday. And then we ask those folks on our council, and they represent parents and community and staff. We have principals, teachers, CSEA members, We ask those folks to participate out in our community meetings and our gatherings of students and parents and staff, so that it's not just, you know, the district office staff listening, but it's we get that flavor of everybody listening. And then we have our community parent student association input. Once again, my plug for my my handout. And then we will open our community survey online, which will start on March 1st and go through the month of March. And then the 16-19 annual report, that's an important piece that we have to report back on each action. So we did declare metrics for each of our goals, and so we have to report out on those as part of the process. And then 17-20 will present the draft at the first June meeting, as I shared, and then the final draft at the second June meeting for adoption along with the budget. So that's our process for as we continue on.
What will be the review process for the survey this year before it goes out?
So we're in the process of working with K-12 Insight on some of the questions and gathering. Actually, we've sort of gathered up some other sample questionnaires to see how other districts are doing it and trying to make it most useful for us for gathering information. It would be nice to be able to sort of online have a conversation with people. But the reality of that is if they answer long, you know, typing into each answer, it takes them a very long time to turn it around. So we need to turn that desire into some sort of way that looks like push a button or say yes or rate it from 1 to 5 or something. So we are working with the folks at K-12 Insight right now to modify that. We've tweaked it. Our intention right now is to tweak it towards the goals. So, you know, kind of a goal one set of questions and some goal two questions based on experiences and practices and actions that are in each one. But we're working through some of those, how do we really get the best feedback from those goals, and so we're working with the company on that right now.
And to further, Teresa, Gina, and I have been working on it, and we aren't yet satisfied with what we have as a product that we think meets the needs of gathering input that is user-friendly as well as provides us with data and information that will allow us to advance forward as a district. And so Teresa taking the lead is on, like, draft 47, trying to revise
it's
it into,
yeah,
probably since I last looked at it. Once we have a draft that we think meets the needs, we're sharing it with cabinet, and it will go to the board to review before it's made public. So the board will have a chance to be able to see it and provide input before. And so we have, our goal is that survey goes public on March 1st, and that's what's stated on your timeline. Today, Ocean changed it to say tentative opening on March 1st, because it takes K-12 Insight a while to turn it around once we've made any additional edits. And so the probability that we're going to make it on March 1st is becoming more slim now that we're at February 14th, but it's always good to continue to have that goal. But the board will have a chance to review it prior to it being public.
Because last year, some of the comments I heard were, some of the questions were compound questions.
Mm-hmm.
So half of it might be one answer, right, and the other half might be a different answer.
Right.
And the other thing was, if they didn't have children in the district, it was like they couldn't apply to them.
And that's a difficulty we found as we've collected samples, that trying to have that community voice piece is important. Mm-hmm. But then on the other hand, absent, you know, coming to the showcase or coming to the, you know, watching the state of the schools, right, or being a part, if I'm just a community member without students, I don't necessarily know in depth what occurs at a school site. So to get opinions other than, you know, I hate the traffic and, you know, I'm glad the kids have somewhere to be from, you know, 8 to 5. You know, how much does the community, you know, do they know enough about the programs to actually evaluate them? And so that's kind of a struggle that lots of us are having, many districts. And so as we work with K-12, getting that information has been, a good way to sort of ask the questions to the community that has a more limited view of what occurs. But we want their input. We want them, you know, to know. Or we want them to tell us what they want as a product, but how do we best ask those questions?
Yeah, because I know I have people that come up to me that don't have children that are more than happy to tell me what they think the school district should be providing.
Yeah.
Some districts have a parent or an employee survey, and then they have a separate community survey, so they're asking for different information. Because of what David said, you know, there are.
And that's one of our iterations of, you know, there are some questions that are for everybody and some questions that are just for students and some just for parents or some for students and parents and not staff. And then if I'm a staff, you know, everybody but the community, because they know very particularly about a program or a strategy. So it's kind of working through some of that as well.
meetings that we're having. We have two that are scheduled. One that is on, I believe it's the 21st of March, and then also another March 6th. So there's two, and we'll do them on the two different sides of town, north and south side of our district. And I know the board has had an interest in how are we actively inviting parents to participate. So there's a big push in terms of the communication, but oftentimes if a parent doesn't have a concern, it's hard to come out. And so we are working, I worked with the superintendent's parent advisory committee to ask them how, you know, your parents, you've come to this meeting, how do we get parents out? And we talked a lot about student entertainment, food trucks. They had a variety of different ideas. But when it came down to it, because we discussed it further, and if it's student entertainment, a parent will be there when their student is providing the music or the song or the dance or whatnot. And when their student's done, they leave. And if the entertainment is at the end, they'll come towards the end because that's their interest. And yes, and so we thought, okay, well, we could do it in the middle. And then it was where are the students when this meeting's taking place and so on and so forth. And so as we reviewed it further, it was discussed that the person that the parents respond to best are those they're closest to, which are teachers and principals. And so we're asking that all of our schools specifically hand invite 5 people to come to the meeting, which would give us 50 people approximately at each. I mean, if the north side of town invited 5 each school, south side 5 each school, then we would have approximately 50 parents in attendance. And if a principal or a child's teacher said, this is a really important meeting, could you attend and represent our school? That is our method that we're trying this year, so that there's a little bit of personal attention, personal invitation. And it can be from school site council, PTA, room parent, you know, whomever, but to have each school invite at least a minimum of 5 and follow up so that there's some representation from all of our schools. So that's the method that we're going to try for our community meetings for this year.
If there's no more discussion, I think we've finished with our discussion. Thank you, Mrs. Healy. That was very good. And team, thanks for all the work you do, and looks like you've been working hard. Now we're ready to get ready for closed session. Are there any comments for closed session, Dr. Mitchell?
There are none.
Okay, then at 5:36, we'll recess to closed session, and hopefully we'll resume by 7. Okay, we'll resume our board meeting, and I reopen the open session. Tonight we're honored to have Giano here as our spotlight school. And for our flag salute, we're going to have Annabelle and Annalisa Sanchez Cabral come up for the flag salute. Would everybody please stand and join them?
May everyone please put their right hand over their heart. Ready? Begin. I pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. And may everyone please be seated.
Thank you very much. Did a good job. There is no closed session items to report out tonight. And we're going to start with our board recognitions. As I mentioned, we're spotlighting Giano School, and we want to thank them, their community, the PTAs, the president, the parents, and everybody for providing our refreshments tonight. And next, we go to the real spotlight report. Tonight we have Mrs. Sanchez come forward, and Mr. Carlos Ochoa, the principal of Giano. And they're going to tell us about what's been going on at their school, so it kind of gives us a glimpse. All right, the girls get to come up too, sure. We're glad to have you guys tonight.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Annabelle Cabral, and I'm an eighth grader at Giano Intermediate. This school year, us students were given many opportunities to prosper. For example, this year we had seminars, which is when teachers switch students who they believe need more time to review their previous lesson, which gives the students a second chance to catch up. We also have a program called the Junior Honor Society, which gives the students chances to develop good habits to be successful, and such as leadership and good character. We also have AVID. This year, AVID students attended a field trip to UCLA. Students said it was inspiring and helped them understand what to expect if and when they go to college. At Giano, we have another program called Science Olympiad, where students compete in events about various scientific topics. This gives the students opportunities to learn in different ways. One thing I'm looking forward to this year is the chemistry experiment the 8th grade science honor students will be doing at home. I feel as this will challenge us and allow us to learn in a different way. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Vanessa Cao, and I'm also a student at Giano Intermediate. During Giano school year, there have been many opportunities for students to get involved in sports, such as volleyball, basketball, softball, and soccer. And I've gotten the opportunity to be on the girls' volleyball team, which was a great pleasure. Giano's teams are always pushing forward to championships, in which we've always have so far. Later on in the year, I'm looking forward to girls' basketball and soccer. Overall, at Giano, students are always looking for many opportunities to work hard, get involved, and do the right thing. Thank you, and have an amazing evening.
Thank you.
Good evening, Board, Superintendent, and members of Cabinet, and Roland Unified's community members attending tonight's meeting. My name is Alicia Sanchez, member of Giano PTSA and parent representative of the School Side Council, but most importantly, parent of two very successful Giano Gladiators. I'll be honest, Mr. Ochoa first approached me about this opportunity. I was very nervous. However, I could not dismiss an opportunity to share and highlight the great things that are currently happening at Giano. Both daughters have greatly benefited from the instructional programs being offered at Giano. For students looking to the challenge, Giano offers integrated honors classes, English, history, and science. This is in addition to the available advanced math pathway, where students have the opportunity to take algebra or geometry prior to going to high school. To further support the individual needs and interests of students, Giano offers a wide array of elective courses in the arts, humanities, music, and STEM. 21st century learning involves more than what happens in classrooms. That's why Giano involved in middle school sports competes in Science Olympiad and in HOME, the only chapter of the National Junior Honor Society in Roland Unified School District. Our school facilities have also recently improved. The new perimeter fence in the front of the school greatly increased student safety. Our new shade structure could not have come at a better time. It is providing much needed shelter for our students during this rainy season. As a parent, I'm also very excited to hear about current plans to install more benches in the quad, to upgrade to a digital marquee and a painted entire school. Through my involvement, I have enjoyed the opportunity to witness the hard work that takes place inside every classroom. It is great to see the commitment to making sure that the exterior of our buildings match those efforts. Parent involvement is also an all-time high at Giano. A very active PTSA and working very hard to support a positive learning environment. School Side Council has always served as a platform for student and parent voice in making decisions. However, it is increased invitations being extended to the entire Giano community to join together in celebrating our student success that has led to Giano's increasingly positive school's culture. As an example, at this time, I would like to invite everyone present to witness this success by inviting you to Giano's first spring kermesse taking place on March 29 from 6 to 7:30 p.m. I could go on and on highlighting all the programs, activities, and events that make Giano a great place to learn. However, it is It is its people who I want to highlight the most. None of these programs could be successful without the efforts and dedication of the Giano team. They are the ones that create the feelings across the school that are it, that there is nothing we don't to make sure all students are successful. For providing us with that team, I would like to conclude highlighting Giano by saying thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Sanchez, Mrs. Sanchez, are you related to these girls?
Yes.
You should be very proud. You all did a very nice job. It's not easy to get up here in front of here and speak. So thank you very much for coming, and thank you, Mr. Ochoa, for the job you're doing. Mr. Ochoa, do you have anything you'd like to add?
I'm just very grateful that our parents and students took the time to come out here today and highlight the great work that is taking place at Giano. I'm thankful to them, and I'm also thankful for the opportunity to share this with the community. So thank you.
Welcome. Okay. Dr. Mitchell, will you give the superintendent's report?
Sure, I will. So first, good evening and happy Valentine's Day to everyone. Love is in the air, apparently, at the RUSD board meeting this evening. So I'm proud to announce that Alvarado Intermediate School has just been redesignated as a California 2017 Schools to Watch Taking Center Stage as a model middle school. This prestigious award recognizes the incredible efforts and impact that have been made by the entire Alvarado school team in the areas of academic excellence, responsiveness to the needs of young adolescents, and social equity. Alvarado was first named a state model middle school in 2004, was redesignated in 2007, 2011, 2014, and now again in 2017. There are only four schools in the state that have received this award five times. So congratulations to Principal Scott Cavaneas and his staff, students, and the whole Alvarado community. We will be recognizing Alvarado in March at the California League of Middle Schools Conference, and then again for the National Schools to Watch program for middle schools in June in Washington, D.C. Alvarado will be recognized in both of those places. In sports news, I want to say congratulations to Roland High School's girls basketball, who won their second Valley Vista League title in a row. So last year they were league champs, and again this year. Nogales boys soccer finished first place in their league, and they're number one division in Division VI playoffs for CIF. Both Nogales and Roland girls soccer team will play the first round of CIF games this Thursday. So we have lots in winter sports that are taking place. Roland High School was also one of 43 teams that competed in this year's Los Angeles County Academic Decathlon. The theme was World War II, and students prepared and studied since last June. A total of 13 gold medals, 7 silver, 2 bronze, and 13 individual medals were won by the team. And there was one student, Alvin Day, who was the top-scoring Roland High School varsity decathlete, winning 7 medals all by himself. So congratulations to the Roland High School team. Our school district kicked off enrollment for the upcoming 2017-18 school year. Priority registration for new students and open enrollment is now through March 6th of 2017, and all new registration is done online at rolandschools.org/enroll. And there's lots of flashing things on every school site webpage as well as the district webpage, so thank you to Gina Ward for doing that. To celebrate registration and provide our community with a chance to learn more about our award-winning programs and our schools, the district held our successful RUSD Showcase event on February 4th at the Roland Heights Community Center, and we had our school tour day on February 7th. Marking your calendars for this Thursday night at 6:30 at Yorbita Elementary School, we're holding our district parent tech night. It's the second one we've held this year, where parents can learn technology skills to support learning at home and how to stay connected to their schools. Parents will also learn how to create a Google email account, how to use the Aries portal, parent portal, HomeLink, and other useful tools, and also be exposed to the technology that students are using daily in their classrooms. There will be district translators, and child care is also provided. And that, again, is this Thursday. I also wanted to highlight that this evening the board is being asked to approve a few resolutions in recognition and honor of particular programs or people or dates. And so highlighting those, February is Career Technical Education Month, and Roland Unified truly excels in the area of providing our students with many opportunities for both college and career readiness. Also, the board's being asked to adopt a resolution recognizing February as Black History Month. Black History Month began in 1976. All of the schools in the district have been participating in classroom and school-wide learning to increase knowledge and awareness of the many significant contributions African Americans have made both in the United States and in the world. Just yesterday, I was honored to be part of a presentation by guest speaker Robert Robinson, whose family member was a bodyguard and close personal friend of Martin Luther King. Mr. Robinson shared this with the students both at Ybarra and at Via Corta about the civil rights movement, the importance of standing up for what you believe in, and doing so in a peaceful way. The students were very moved by Mr. Robinson's presentation, and he was also accompanied there by his daughter. March is National School Nutrition Month, the week of March 6th to the 10th, having a specific focus on school breakfast. And as you know, our district is currently piloting a universal or free breakfast program in four of our schools. March 2nd is Read Across America Day in honor of Dr. Seuss's birthday, and our schools have scheduled several guest readers to come into the classrooms and share the joy of reading. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Mitchell. Continuing on with our student segment, we always try to get them on early so they can go home and do their homework or whatever, get to bed. We're going to start out with someone new to us tonight. It's Crystal Bahina Pilo. And Crystal is representing Santana High School tonight. Welcome, Crystal.
Good evening, Madam President, members of the board, Superintendent Dr. Mitchell, and members of the audience. My name is Crystal Bahina Pilo, and I am the second semester ASB president for Santana High School. I came to Santana my junior year during first semester, and ever since then, I have made big improvements. Being at Santana has helped me get caught up with credits, and most importantly, it has helped me become the person I am today. As president, I plan to work along with the rest of ASB to make our school a welcoming environment to other students. I want students to see Santana as an option to make up their credits, but most importantly, an opportunity to better themselves. Santana has changed and shaped many students in amazing ways, and I believe that everyone deserves a chance. Last month, we had our second blood drive of the year. Our school-wide percentage was 25%. We are encouraging more donations for our next blood drive, which will be May 4th, and we are accepting public donations to make the most impact in our neighborhood. Pennies for Patients is coming up March 13th through March 27th. We are collecting money to help patients with blood cancers, and as a school, our goal is to collect $500. All of the money collected will be given to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society Student Series campaign. Santana High School is joining the fight against blood cancers and helping LLS fund research and care for patients. I'm proud to say that the Solar Boat competition is in full swing. Our team is finishing up the second report and is continuing to work on the public service announcement. The hull of the boat is currently under construction. Our amazing team can't wait to compete on May 18th through May 21st, and we gladly invite you all to join us. Your biggest hurdle isn't your opponent, it's yourself. I believe this quote has a lot to do with having confidence. Confidence to stand up against yourself and your negative thoughts, and actually believe that you are capable of doing many things. You are your own battle, so strive to become a better version of yourself. Thank you.
Thank you, Crystal. Very nice job. If any of you try to get a chance to go watch the Solar Boat contest, it's a lot of fun at Lake Skinner. Next is Nogales High School, but apparently Laura Sanchez is ill. And Joseph, what's your last name, Joseph?
Cho.
Joseph Cho is going to read her report, and then he's going to give his from Roland, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Joseph.
Yeah, I know. You got 2/3 the floor tonight of that part.
Good evening, Madam President, Superintendent Dr. Mitchell, members of the Cabinet, and members of the audience. My name is Joseph Cho, and I currently attend Roland High School, but I'll be representing Nogales as well as Roland tonight. So first, to begin with Nogales High School's report. So in January and February, it has been an action-packed month. The Drama Club has released information about a new musical performance coming soon. They just finished a student-written play, Leave Me When You're Better, on the 20th of last month. They are now getting ready for their next show. Our sports team are doing the same, moving on to the final scenes, which includes track and field, badminton, boys, tennis, baseball, and softball. Our boys wrestling team are in second place by Danny Rubio and first place by DJ Flores at the Bishop Amont tournament, while the girls place seventh by Jolene DeZone, fifth by Michelle Gutierrez, and third by Alondra Gonzalez Moreno. The girls and boys JV and varsity basketball teams won their games against Workman High School, with the Lady Nobles gaining the win in the last 9 seconds of the game. The boys basketball had another victory against Azusa High School. Our school also wants to congratulate all the football players that received all-league honors. These boys and girls for all these sports did a great job this season, and we look forward to more wins for next year. Right now, many clubs and organizations are becoming more active in our school. SCTA, SETA, will be raising donations for the next 3 weeks for Orange County's animal care program, and they invite anyone that can bring any bedding, grooming, and or pet care items for the animals to come and for them to donate. The HOSA Club has raised funds for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society through the campaign called Pennies for Patients. The UNICEF Club has begun informative meetings and posters for our school that explain the current humanitarian crisis occurring in Syria. The Herencia Latina Club is making their own event as well, the Latin Ball. They look forward to a lot of the Nobles coming out on February 14th, which is today, I believe, to have a great night with them all. The team's Creating Peace has its first meeting as well that revolves around creating peace in people's lives, community, and world. ASB Junior's Cabinet has had their own fundraiser, which involves selling Valentine grams. The AVID, ASB, and IB programs have begun applications and interviews, and we see a lot of students becoming more involved in school through organizations like these. With activities like the ones previously noted, Nogales looks forward to continuing to demonstrate our noble pride. Thank you. That concludes the Nogales Report.
Good job.
I guess I stay
okay.
Here.
Now, Roland, keep talking. You're on a
good
roll.
Job,
all right,
good job.
Moving on to Roland High School's report. So, currently, last week, we had a new event for the seniors. It was called Flapjack Friday. It was the first time we did this, and we actually cooked the pancakes for the seniors, and they received syrup, powdered sugar, and strawberries on top of their pancakes. And it was really well received. So I do believe that we're going to repeat the event next year, following years.
Sounds good.
For this Monday, we had the Heart and Soul Drive, which was through the club in Hacienda Heights. They were requiring new pairs of socks that should be donated for students within our district that needed them. So we had that for ASB to be involved in. And also that happened actually today was Valentine grams that were delivered. So all throughout this February 1st to 13th, we had these grams sold in $1, $5, $8, $10 packages. And the reason we were doing this was because to raise funds for our class of 2018 juniors, and they would be able to use that money for prom or what sorts. So it was successful, and it was delivered today. An important event that is happening this week, actually, is World Kindness Week. And we plan, every day to have a certain event, whether it is through lunch or a poster on our main buildings that demonstrates maybe it is to spread love around or to post a compliment for another person or to post something they're thankful for, just to encourage that, just to try at least for a week to focus on kindness and try to be nice to each other, because I feel like it is often forgotten. Also happening this week is our dodgeball tournament. So our class of 2019 officers, they're in charge of this, and what they do is have applications brought out to the students of high school, and anyone can sign up, and they're able to compete through a bracket system, and the winners will receive a prize at the end, as well as a chance to go against the teachers, and everyone likes it when teachers get involved. So that's happening Friday. Also, this Thursday is PTSA Founders Day. This is where we reward and recognize our faculty's excellence, and we're able to actually take the time, to give thanks back to where it deserves, and it's actually kind of like a nice scene to see teachers being able to see the best of each other. And a big event coming this month for us is on February 24th, which is Renaissance Assembly. So we host this every year, and the focus of it is for students who have a GPA of 2.5 or higher, or they have no D's and F, they're able to attend. They're able to apply and receive a T-shirt, which is their ticket in. In the assembly, we have dance competitions and big performance as well as like a skit. And it's just a way for students to kind of get rewarded and recognized for what they achieved and what they did is important, so they don't feel like it's looked over, because we try our best to make sure students know that everything they do is important and valued. Coming up right after that is actually a lot of things. So, yeah. So we have our spring dance, which comes to be revealed right on the day of our Renaissance Assembly. And the theme is still to be announced. But the students will be able to find out during lunch and able to witness in the quad. And following that, we have our fashion shows that comes on March 6th, as well as the dance itself on March 24th. So students are able to actually bring in guests this time. We actually cleared a proposal, so that'll be interesting to see in action. Also, on March 7th, we have Club Picture Day for Yearbook. This includes all the clubs, so clubs get notified that they have to take the picture that day or else they don't get a shot in the yearbook. And it's a nice way for students to dress in their club attire and come out and actually, you know, be all together once for a picture. We also have Kick Butts Day, which is promoting a drug-free lifestyle. Like, it's like to say kick the butts of cigarettes out on March 15th. So it's focused. We try to, like, put a lot of posters, and whether it's on the PA system that doing drugs, whether it is from, like, marijuana, cigarettes, or even drinking, that they're all bad and not proper choices. Focused on ASB now, we actually have a mandatory meeting for applicants who are wanting to run for officer position or member at large on February 21st, Tuesday. So this informs students who wants to run about the rules of campaigning, what to expect in ASB, and what things they should be following and not cheating, perhaps. Also, coming following that is the campaign week itself from March 6th to March 10th, which is probably quite stressful and crazy and very colorful around campus. Lots of posters and lots of necklaces flying around. And as we continue, ASB elections begins the week after, where the students are actually able to come up and speak and present to the students, whether it's a small speech or a long speech, able to say what they're running for and really present themselves a first impression. And the voting actually takes place each day, according to each class and place, yes, position. For athletics and our performing arts, we actually have a fun event, which is called Powder Buff. It's where the junior boys and the senior boys are able to go against each other in a game of volleyball. And it's actually quite competitive, and people get all crazed about it. It definitely does increase student involvement, and lots of people join, and it does raise funds for the girls' volleyball team. And it's actually a big fundraiser for them, so they actually get involved. They have the students be the coaches for the junior and seniors, and it's kind of cute and kind of funny. And for our last item is we have a play coming up, which is on March 16th. They called it the Seussical Musical, after a Dr. Seuss-themed musical idea. And it's still in development, and people are actually casted currently, and they're practicing and rehearsing. So we're still here to, you know, hear more news about it, but it's coming up, so you can expect it to come then. And besides that, I believe that concludes my report for Roland High School. Thank you.
Wow, you've had a busy month. Now, when do you squeeze class into all that? You do. That's good. Thank you. Next, I'd like to turn over to Dr. Mitchell the next item, which is the fourth grade achievement award program, which she'll explain and share with one of our staff.
Perfect. That would be great. At this point, actually, I'm going to turn it over to Teresa Healy, and Teresa Healy will take the board through this opportunity that we have for our fourth grade students in the district.
Good evening. Earlier tonight at our study session, I had the opportunity to share our LCAP progress for goals 3 through 6. And in goal 6, if you're not aware, if you didn't actually read all 130 fascinating pages, it's about celebrating the things that we do for our students, and it's about celebrating all aspects of our students. We put money towards academics. We support them in other activities, extracurricular activities, both sports and academic competitions, and we encourage our community to be involved in there, and that's all encompassed in goal 6. And so tonight I'm excited to share with you that Mr. Naus, who's going to come on up here as I speak. Mr. Robert Naus, the son of Mr. Frank and Mrs. Marjorie Naus, along with his siblings, have provided the district with a generous donation from their parents' estate in order to continue the fourth grade achievement award for our elementary students. The donation in the amount of $25,000 was recognized at the December 13, 2016 board meeting. Mrs. Marjorie Nouse and Mr. Frank Nouse had a special love for children. They volunteered and fostered reading at several schools in our district. Mr. and Mrs. Nouse started the Fourth Grade Achievement Award about 20 years ago, and we had to go back into the archives to find out that it's been actually 20 years. We didn't think it had quite been that long, to encourage fourth grade students. They inspired students to be well-rounded individuals and to put their best effort forward in all of their life. The award was geared towards those students who did not always achieve the honor roll status but worked hard to do better in school and had positive effect on others by being good citizens. Mr. Nouse kept the award alive by visiting schools and talking to students 2 to 3 times per year. After Frank and Marjorie's passing, their children have decided to keep the program going by providing the necessary funding and reaching out to our students. After much discussion, Robert and his siblings have decided to expand the award from only 5 of our elementary schools to all of our elementary schools in the district. Mr. Nouse is here tonight to share a little bit about the program, and also he's made his initial visits to all of our schools. So, yes, he visited all 14 of our elementary schools and got a chance to talk to the kids, and I just wanted him to be able to share a little bit about what he's doing to encourage our kids to do better.
Thank you, members of the board. My name is Bob Nouse. I don't go by Robert. My mom and dad were involved in education long before they started the Fourth Grade Achievement Awards back in 1992 or thereabouts. They supported 3 of their 5 children in getting college educations. My sister got a bachelor's degree from the University of Arizona in education. My brother got a bachelor from Willamette University in Oregon in education. And I got a bachelor's degree from UCLA in microbiology, so I was kind of the odd boy out. But after my dad passed and I would be visiting with my mother, every 3 months she would point her finger at me and say, "You will start the Fourth Grade Achievement Awards again." So I have done that to the tune of $25,000. I had a chance in, was it January, I guess? Well, January, to visit all 14 elementary schools in the district and visit with all fourth grade classes within those elementary schools, and it was a joy, an absolute joy. What an inquisitive bunch of kids they are. Mom and Dad felt that the fourth grade was the grade you caught them all and you got them, you grabbed them to go on and continue their education, and it was evident to me that that is truly the case. The teachers were all very supportive, as were the administrators I met with before I went to the classes. I am really looking forward to the selections that the teachers will make at the end of April and then giving out the $50 United States savings bond to each of the children that's been selected for this award. And I thank you for the opportunity of being able to do this. All right.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate the efforts and the importance of education to you and your parents.
It's a total family involvement. My brothers and sisters are all behind this, and I may have a sister coming down from Fresno to the award ceremony.
All right.
That will be the case.
That'd be wonderful. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Bob. Dr. Mitchell, do we have any public comments tonight?
We do have some.
Okay, let me read the rules.
Okay.
Remarks are limited to 3 minutes unless extended further or limited by vote of the board. A maximum of 20 minutes unless extended by the board is allotted for each subject discussed. Ordinarily, board members will not respond to the presentations and no action will be taken. However, the board may give direction to staff following a presentation. First, we have Lauren Yocomizo come forward and speak. And Nicholas, you're together? I'm sorry. Okay.
You're going to combine your time? Or you 3 minutes. And you can each have 3 minutes or you can combine your time? I have 2 separate cards. If you two.
Okay.
So you want to speak 3 each or 6 together or 3 together?
You know what? We'll go with 3 and then
okay.
We'll try and keep it at 3.
All right.
Okay.
Good evening. It's a pleasure to be here on behalf of LA County Supervisor Janice Hahn. My name is Lauren Yokomizo, and this is Nick Holden. So we are her new representatives. And just want to say thank you for having us here, allowing us the opportunity to just come and listen. And it's just been a pleasure. We have just a little quick announcement, but before I start, I just want to share a little bit about Supervisor Hahn in case you're not familiar. She was sworn in to be the 4th District LA County Supervisor and began in December. And since then, she's been working very hard on different issues that affect us countywide, including environmental justice and homelessness. That's actually her passion is fighting homelessness. And just as something that we want to share with you as a way of providing education is there is going to be a ballot on March 7th, countywide ballot that is going to address homelessness. It's going to provide funding, and that's called Measure H, and it's a quarter cent sales tax. So that's something that voters can consider next month when they go to the polls. And we have also some flyers here to announce an event that's going to take place at the Hacienda Heights Community Center on February 27th, 9 a.m. to 11:30. It's a business summit to end homelessness, and Supervisor Hahn will be there in addition to someone that we have who's the expert on homelessness in the county. His name is Phil Ansell, and Anthony Duarte. Some of you may know him. He's with the Chamber of Commerce San Gabriel Valley, and we have a number of other leaders within from the community that will be speaking on how they are using their platform as a business to address homelessness. So we just want to let you know about that in case you're interested, and we'll provide you with some flyers. And we are here for the community. So if you need anything, if there's an issue that relates to the county, a community concern that you would like to let our office know about, please feel free to reach out to us. And just going to hand over to Nick to let you know how you can contact us.
Hello, and thank you for having us. This is Lauren and I's first board meeting, so we're happy to be here. And we just wanted to kind of connect with you, get to know you a little bit better, because we're going to be here, and we'd like to help in any way we can. And we're located on our same office on Fairway Drive. And if you wanted to take our number down, it's 909-594-6561. And we can be there for your assistance. So thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker is Don Sachs from West Covina, friend to many.
Good evening, Madam President, members of the board, superintendent, cabinet, audience. My name is Don Sachs. As indicated, I do live in West Covina, but I spend most of my time in the East San Gabriel Valley here representing Mount San Antonio College, the little college over the hill there with about 60,000 students for this next school year. We are already planning for the first and second graders that are now in the household, and that's referred to as the Educational and Facilities Master Plan. One decade, 10 years from now, we're deciding with the help of the community, the districts, the city councils, what curriculum and what buildings we're going to need on campus. Hard to say, because with the inventions that come out every week, we don't know what we're going to be providing as a curriculum. But as part of that program, we've established 8 meeting locations, which will be attended by at least 2 of our board of trustees. In this case, the meeting is going to be held on March 15th from 6:30 to 8 o'clock in the evening. We will have trustees Judy Chen Haggerty, and also Emmanuel Baca. It's referred to as a public workshop, but there's really no work to it. I've been led to believe there will be hors d'oeuvres and beverage of a non-alcoholic type. But it is to socialize and solicit input from the community, the desire of the community members, as well as elected officials. What do you see in 10 years that we need at Mount SAC? So it's just an announcement. It's always a pleasure to visit. Thank you. The location will be the Pathfinder Community Center. I did leave some flyers, but there will be press coverage and email coverage coming also. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sachs. Next, we have Roy Humphreys. Mr. Humphreys.
Okay, folks, first of all, we'd like to commend, you know, all the students, all the schools, so far they're doing quite well academically and so forth. They always like to be on the positive side with that. But then we have to come to certain realities. And I commend the board and the administration here who has had the ability to wade through, and as we know, President Trump uses the word swamp. We've got to clean the swamp. And that you all are able to go through the swamp of core value demise and the pungent essence thereof. It takes a special person to do that. Something most recently that said the district open house, I believe that's what's called, something like that, where the Chinese World Journal did a very nice article, and Superintendent Mitchell, and we also had Carrie Chun and David Malcolm featured in the photo there. But what was disconcerting is that the superintendent noticed that, hey, you know, those federal funds, we get them, okay, we don't, okay. We got, hey, under the pretense that it's the children's safety first. And to this, is this the same superintendent snubbing her nose at millions of dollars that was quibbling over pennies for doing the video recording, which we now actually cost nothing? And talk about the gentleman was here, wanted to communicate with the community. Boom, here it is going on right now. Okay, and so then there was this the same superintendent and board members, Ms. Ebenkamp and Ms. Pride, who were balking at spending $1 million of those millions of dollars at federal funds that we don't need on a forensic audit, which allowed the whole community to have some confidence in this district's financial doings, and so we don't have to hold our nose anymore. Is this the same superintendent who refuses to advertise these videos so that communicate to include the bond oversight committee, which is another feature right there? And as was stated in Sean's meeting over there at the teachers union, their editorial comments. And as we point out in anything, and this is a very public sensitive situation, it was too hot in the kitchen. The door is always open. But yes, this is the same district that proclaims they have seven gold medal or gold ribbon schools. And hey, great, thumbs up on that, so forth. But essentially blocks out the existence of 9 to 11 schools in program improvement. In a little legal term, ipso facto, we have the three monkeys syndrome. Hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. And to that, we also look forward to the Bond Oversight Committee becoming truly an independent committee. Thank you.
Well, thank you for those kind words, Mr. Humphreys. Next is Shay Lohman. Welcome.
Hi. Good evening, board. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody. A lot of educators here on Valentine's Day, too, and thank you for being here. I appreciate the LCAP discussion that took place earlier this evening, and I'm excited to have the opportunity to visit students throughout the district in the coming weeks to help in capturing the student voice in our LCAP creation process. In addition, association leadership is looking forward to providing our voice in the process later in March. We look forward to the continued dialogue in the coming months as we go through this extremely important LCAP process in our community. The association would like to join Roland Unified in recognizing February as Black History Month. In recognition of that, I'd like to take a moment to point out some stark realities that exist in our education system when it comes to the shortage of black educators. Of more than 6 million teachers in the United States, today 80% are white and 64% are white female. Of 6 million teachers in the U.S., only 1.8% of those are black male and only 1.7% Hispanic or Latino male. Considering the entire student body of the United States has only one or has one white female teacher for every 15 students, but only one black or male Hispanic male teacher for every 534 students. To be clear, this is not an indictment of RUSD. This is a national issue. Rowland Unified has roughly 3.6% African-American educators with an African-American student population of roughly 2.3%. However, we currently have a certificated staff of roughly 35% Hispanic educators, but our district services 63% Hispanic students. Students need to see educators that look like them. They need educators that share their experiences. As a nation, it is imperative that we have a serious discussion about the shortage of people of color, particularly black and Latino males entering the field of education. So, as always, the association appreciates your leadership on the Board of Education, and again, we wish everybody a very happy Valentine's Day. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we're moving on to the public hearing section, of which we have two public hearings. The first one is the initial proposal for bargaining from the California School Employees Association, Chapter 133, to the Rowland Unified School District for the 2016-17 school year, and we'll open this public hearing at 7:57. Don't all run up here at once. Seeing no comments, we'll close this session at 7:58. Sorry. Our next public hearing is the initial proposal from the Rowland Unified School District to the California School Employees Association, Chapter 133, for the purpose of negotiations. And I open this public hearing at 7:58. Not going backwards. 7:58. We need music. Since there are no people to speak, I close this hearing at 7:59. Next, we have some discussion items. The first one is about textbooks, the English Language Arts grades TK through 5. This is for discussion purposes only. Dr. Mitchell?
You don't need a motion. There's no motion.
Okay. Can I have a motion to open this item for discussion?
I'll move. Second.
We have a motion and a second. Dr. Mitchell, now.
Perfect.
So this item is a discussion-only item, and we have gone through a very extensive English language arts adoption pilot. There are a number of staff members that are here with us in the audience. I'm going to turn it over to Teresa. But what we're interested in, I know that many of you had an opportunity to come to our textbook open house. Teresa's here to answer any questions that you have, and she'll give just a brief overview.
Well, good evening again. I do want to acknowledge the folks in the crowd. They're part of many, many teachers who are part of our process. We began this process almost a year ago to make a thoughtful selection for our students. As you know, especially at the elementary level, our students spend a good portion of their day in language arts class, almost half of their day during language arts time. And so this process is very important to us as a district and what we do with that selection. And so I want to acknowledge the work that the committee has done. And the teachers who weren't part of the committee but were also providing input because they spent many hours looking through books, digging into the materials, paying a lot of attention to the nuances of the materials as they made comparisons, listened to presentations, narrowed down the choices from many, many to just two, to then pilot them and try them out in their classrooms, and so change gears after they had started school with our regular core materials to try the pilot, change gears again for a second pilot, and then thoughtfully you know, score them and make decisions about what was best for our students. And so I want to thank the committees for doing that work. So I don't know if there are any questions. I know we had opportunities. We had both Amy Oliver and Katie Ellis and Brian Lamar were at the presentation with the board or the open house to review the materials. And I know you had many questions then, but I don't know if there's any further questions.
Ms. Friedman, sorry. Okay, just a comment. Thank you, teachers. I know how hard it is in guide piloting two different ones. But the decision you made as we looked through the books, or I did, I am really impressed that they have an ELD section that's the same. Like, usually you have to have two different, and it's all together. And it will go in with the Spanish dual immersion. And I love all the reasons why you put up, why you thought it was the best series to get. And I think it was a very good decision. It has so many positive things. So I was very impressed with the series.
Any other comments?
I have a comment. I've thoroughly enjoyed the presentation. Spent over an hour here talking to them. And I was looking more at the process that they went through to make the selection. And I was impressed with the brainstorming they did and how they came down to the selection of the last, two or three that they were looking at. The fact they did a pilot to see if it was as effective as they thought it would be. And then I was interested in how these new books would interface with our technology being more and more important in education, and whether these books interface with that, and they do, to the point that it even works at home. The other thing I was concerned about was staff training. And I understand that there's 10 days of staff training available. And then how new teachers coming in, since this is a multi-year program, how the new teachers would be trained. And they explained that to me. And then also supports. Whenever you have a new program, you always need a hotline or a place to call to get help. And that was provided too. So I felt that they covered all of the elements, from training to support to the piloting. And I was impressed with the books also, the actual appearance of the books. I like the idea that that they have consumables, meaning that they have workbooks that the student gets to use that gets renewed with a new workbook so they can actually write in them and keep track of their progress. And I thought that was excellent too. Some of the books I understand they looked at was all technology-based, and not all of our students have the luxury of having internet or computers at home. So I'm glad that they picked one that isn't totally based on technology, at this point in time. And the most important thing is that these new books, rather than just being standards-based, really encourages student engagement, and it puts the responsibility onto the student for his learning, versus just sitting back as a passive learner. And I thought that was excellent, too. So, good selection.
Thank you, Mr. Malkin. Any other comments? I'd just like to thank Dr. Mitchell and the teaching staff, Mrs. Healy, for bringing this choice to the board to see. I know Ms. Pride and I, when we first came on the board, we were asking, where are the textbooks? When do we adopt the textbook? We never see them. Now we get to see them, and I appreciate that. It's too bad more parents wouldn't come, but it was a very good display and good textbooks that were chosen for our students. So
if I can clarify, back in the spring when we also had an open house with all the materials, and we did have many more parents participate at that time.
Okay. Now we have a motion and a second. So, okay. Yeah. Are there any teachers in the audience?
Yes, piloted
this
pilot
program?
Teacher, stand up,
sorry.
Please. Stand up. I know you've taught all day. You had Valentine's party.
Oh, we have a lot of them. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. And I'd also like to acknowledge Amy Oliver and Katie Elder and Sylvia Rivas, if they would stand up. They led the process, which was very detailed. Stand up. You have to stand up, too.
All right.
They led us through the process, and they really just were a good support to the teachers and kept us all informed about what they were doing, and just led a very thoughtful process for our teachers.
That's great. That's great. Thank you very much. Okay, we have a motion and a second. I'm still not sure if we need a motion on this, but there's not going to be any action, so would we vote? So we're not going to vote. Okay. Next, we have another textbook recommendation.
the Spanish Language Arts English Language Development grades. I'm sorry, I skipped one. This next one is for English Language Arts grades 6 through 12. And Dr. Mitchell?
So we separated these three items. We separated our elementary from our secondary and then our dual immersion program texts in case the board wanted separate presentations or different information. And so they're on this agenda. They have different attachments that apply to those particular grade levels and or programs. But we wanted, again, to have it separate. The board is not voting on these this evening. This will be brought to the board for a vote because it, in March. Because this is such a large textbook adoption, we wanted to make sure that we gave plenty of time for our community to be able to provide input through the guidance of what our teachers have done. A lot of parents have been exposed to it throughout the grades, TK through 12. But again, wanted to have the opportunity that be on the agenda twice, allow for parent input, so because it is a large adoption and it is an expensive adoption. So we wanted to make sure we're very thorough in the process. So the next item is just looking at grades 6 through 12, if there's anything particular as it relates to questions for high school.
I would just say ditto.
Okay.
I just said. But I would like to add one more thing. I'm sure there's some people out there wondering, well, what happens to the old textbooks? You know, do you just throw them into the garbage? Well, no, we don't. And maybe Teresa could explain what happens to the old textbooks.
Okay. So after the adoption occurs, we will actually bring to the board a proposal for a disposal, and we declare the books obsolete. And we usually wait until the new books actually get here before we do that, just in case there's that, you know, warehouse problem. And so typically it happens over the summer that we would declare them obsolete. And then we would, there are certain things that by education code that we can do with them, and oftentimes we end up giving them to other schools that continue to use the old adoption or sell them to a reseller, or those are usually what happens to them.
So they get recycled.
Yes. We don't throw them away in the dumpster.
Right.
Did you have a comment, Ms. Frieden?
Yes. At the textbook viewing, the elementary K through 5 were over on this side, and they were it was very good to look through all of that. But then when I went to the other side, that's a little bit above my thinking, and so they did a great presentation to explain everything that it entailed so that I was able to have a better understanding of the textbooks. Again, another wonderful choice.
Thank you. Mr. Chen?
Yep. Talking about these textbooks, and is it possible to have somewhere in the district library have a complete set of textbooks from TK to 12th grade, all of them, a complete set? So for us to view it or parents to see any time.
We have had that throughout the adoption. So actually, I just moved the TK-12 books out of my office this morning to make way for you all.
Okay.
So it's been in my office for, I don't know, you were in there looking at them. I don't know. It's been there for a while because the teachers have brought them over. And they are in Teresa's office or in Frank and Miriam's offices. So the Education Services has them, and they'll be there through the March meeting until we make the adoption. So we don't have them in the library, but they're here at the district office for parents who choose to view. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they're no longer in my office. I moved them this morning.
Just to clarify, you mean the books that we just reviewed, or do you mean the ones that we're going to replace them with?
I mean the books we're using currently.
Currently.
No?
So, no, those are not in the Ed Services department. There are so many books that we use. We do not have one location that has every single textbook that's there. If there's a particular interest of a board member that would like to look at a book, I'd be happy to get a copy. But when you look at every single book that's used from TK through grade 12, we do not house those in one single location. And it also, I mean, it would not be necessarily a good use. They're expensive. And so, you know, having them sit there with our students in their hands. But if there's a need for a copy, I certainly can get one.
Okay. So anytime a board member or any community member can ask a request for it.
So the community member would go to the school, and their kids are using those books. And so that they would be able to go to the school and talk to the principal and say, and the kids have those books with them at home. So they're able to see their children's textbook. But if a board was interested, yes, I could get you a copy. Yeah.
Well, sometimes I want to see, when something comes up, I want to see what is in in the book and what the kids are learning on that particular part of the section. So.
But they won't be available a year from now, the old ones. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So you need to ask quick. Okay. The next textbook discussion is the Spanish Language Arts English Language Development, grades K through 6. Dr. Mitchell?
And again, the comments may be the same in terms of ditto. Sylvia Rivas and her department and Heidi West is here as well in the audience looking at the textbooks used in our dual immersion programs. And so that if the board has any questions regarding these books.
Any questions or discussion? Okay, then we'll revisit these next month. Okay, now we have some resolutions. The first one is resolution number SO-16-1701, the Career and Technical Education Month, February 2017. I need a motion to approve and adopt this resolution declaring February 2017 as Career and Technical Education Month.
I make a motion.
Second?
I'll second.
I have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Next, resolution number AS-16-1704, National School Breakfast Week and National Nutrition Month. This resolution is to proclaim March 6th through 10th, 2017, as National School Breakfast Week and the month of March as National Nutrition Month. May I have a motion? Second?
I'll second.
Any discussion?
I'm very happy to second that motion with the pilot that we're doing for the universal free breakfast. And I think it's a great way to honor the month.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution number SO-16-1702, Read Across America Day, March 2nd, 2017. This is to adopt a resolution proclaiming March 2nd as Read Across America Day. Can I have a motion?
I'll move.
Second?
Second.
Oh. Mr. Chen looks like he beat you. Any discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Resolution number SO-16-1703, Black History Month, February 2017. This resolution proclaims that February 2017 is Black History Month. May I have a motion?
I make a motion.
Second?
I'll second.
Any discussion?
I do. I actually had a quote that I wanted to read at the end of board meeting, but I think it's more appropriate here if the board will entertain me briefly. In honor of Black History Month, I wanted to read a quote from Carter Whitson, who's a Black historian, journalist, and author, and was the founder of the Association for the Study of African American Life and History. And in today's political climate, I thought that one of his quotes was very appropriate. It said, we should emphasize not Negro history, but the Negro in history. What we need is not a history of selected races or nations, but the history of the world void of national bias, race hate, and religious prejudice.
Any further discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Next, we're going to cover the revised career certification program sequence of courses. Dr. Mitchell? Whoops, sorry. Can I have a motion for this?
I'll move.
Second? This is just a board discussion. Dr. Mitchell isn't going to.
Now, this is an item for the board to adopt, so this is a vote item. But I don't have anything additional to add unless there's the questions from the board, and I'd be happy to answer them.
I want to make a comment first, since Mr. Sachs is here, that he may play an important role in this program, and I want to thank Mount SAC for participating with us in that program, certification program. One question I have in 1 through 8, environmental, How would that fit into one of those categories, or is that just not included?
Environmental in terms of?
The earth, preserving water, ecology.
So they fit in different pathways, and I know Rocky's in the back as well. And so one of the things that Rocky and his team have worked really hard to do is to try to align our pathways with the 15 industry sectors. Mm-hmm. And so not everything is covered. Rocky, do you know specifically what we're looking at? It really would be environmental science, I think, is what you're looking.
Exactly.
Yeah. And do you know where we're addressing some of that?
Environmental science is not.
Okay. Thank you. We do have environmental science courses, not part of a career pathway at this time.
Is business a standalone pathway? I didn't say business. No. Okay.
No.
All right. Any further discussion? Let's have the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nobody. It passed. Okay, this is the second reading and adoption of Board Policy 0450, Comprehensive Safety Plan. May I have a motion to adopt? Second?
Second.
Discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Next is the second reading and adoption of Board Policy 5116, Point one, intra-district open enrollment. Can I have a motion?
Make a motion.
Second?
I'll second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Next is second reading and adoption Board Policy 5117, inter-district and intra-district attendance. May I have a motion? Second?
Second.
Discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Next one is discussion only. This is the first reading of the revised Board Policy 1312.3, Uniform Complaint Procedures. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, we'll just move on. So this will come up again next month for our adoption. Item M is the piggyback bid, Los Rios Community College District Furniture and Related Support Services, bid number 14018. I need a motion to approve this item.
I make a motion.
Second?
I'll second.
Discussion? Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Next, the authorization to prevent misassignment. May I have a motion? Second?
Second.
Discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Next is to review and discuss the 2017-18 Board of Education meeting schedule. This is a discussion item. Dr. Mitchell?
And so I wanted to share with the board, and we have an opportunity to discuss in an open session meeting regarding an interest that has been expressed by the board to have a conversation around our board meeting schedule for beginning July 1, 2017, so the 2017-18 year. There's been some conversation about moving our meetings from a Tuesday evening to Thursday evening. And there's been some interest expressed about moving our start time from 7 p.m. open session to 6 p.m. open session. And so there is nothing to vote on this evening but to provide direction back to me in terms of development of suggested calendars or dates and in terms of what would be the interest of the board.
Okay. Any discussion? Donna?
The 6 o'clock time is very good for the students. I think that's a good time to start so that they can get home earlier.
Also, the 6 p.m. time is also good for the staff and parents as well, because as most of us know, by this time of the meeting, we're talking to employees and no one else. And I think that if we did start earlier, that there would be a chance that more people would be able to stay for a longer period during the meeting. And then as far as moving the day from Tuesday to Thursday, as a board member, that's a strong interest to me just to have the additional time to go through the agenda and the packets and ask questions without bothering our superintendent and cabinet on the weekends, which they so graciously allow us to do. But I do feel bad having to take up your time on the weekend to answer our questions in regards to agenda items. In this way, you could do that during work days and not on your private, personal, family time.
I'm sure they would appreciate that. Are there any objections to changing it? You know, speaking con?
And just one more comment. You said the community has the community stated that they prefer Thursday over Tuesday.
It has not been brought up with the community until there's a conversation first with the board. And part of it, I think, what you two have pointed out as well is the community at large, if they are interested in a topic on the agenda, they're present at a meeting. I will bring it up and have a conversation with our Superintendent Parent Advisory Council. And or with PTA, but again, you all are the ones that are at every meeting, and so really it's at the direction of what the board would like to do. But in terms of asking, yes, that's the groups I'll vet it with.
Going through the PTAs is a good idea to get a little pulse on the feeling.
For my individual needs, it works out better on Thursday.
For working people, I was just, you know, I'm curious about that too, so we'll get that feedback maybe from the PTA groups.
So we moved to Thursday. So what is the date that you released the agenda?
So it hasn't been decided. It would move to Thursday. That, again, would be brought back to the board. Then that, again, is at the direction of the board. And so if the board, what I would recommend is that we would provide the board with a draft copy of the agenda on Friday. Would not be published yet. We publish 72 hours before the start of the meeting, unless it's a special meeting, and then that's 24 hours prior. But the board would be able to see a draft copy of the agenda and allow us in that final development, and then we would publish it 72 hours prior to the meeting. And that would allow some additional staff time and board time to prepare in terms of questions, because all of you are very diligent and very engaged and read that agenda very thoroughly and provide us with a lot of questions. And I know you feel a lot of pressure. We provide it for you on Friday evening, and then you give me the questions on Sunday. We all spend a lot of time together answering questions on Sunday and Monday in preparation so that you're well informed at the meeting tonight. And so it would give us a little bit more time for the board and for staff.
The one thing I didn't look at when I thought about this was the school calendar and holidays. If Thursday's going to interfere with any of that?
We would, again, the board has the ability to adopt the calendar if we needed to adjust a Thursday one way or another, because it will impact potentially with winter break. It might impact with, but we can move it.
That's one more.
Hey, Donna?
I would appreciate the extra time for reading. Like, even just the LCAP took a long time to go through, and then the purchase orders, that would give us extra time to look through all of our reading, which would be nice.
Okay, so we will bring it back next month.
So the consensus that I hear from the board, and you'd like for staff to develop a board schedule that would be Thursday evenings starting at 6 p.m., being cognizant of holidays, making sure there aren't any conflicts and so forth there, and I'll also ask for input from PTA. Okay. And we'll bring this back to our March meeting.
Okay. Next is item 9P, the 2017 CSBA Delegate Assembly Election. At this time, I need to know if there is a nomination or nominations from the list of candidates that we were sent to the CSBA Delegate Assembly Subregion 23B. Mr. Chen is on that list of nominees.
I would like to make a motion that we nominate Carrie Chen from Rolling Unified School District and Helen Hall from Walnut Valley Unified School District. Or is it both?
It's one.
I thought it was two. The paper said two.
Yes. For no more than one candidate.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was here.
Okay, sorry. then make a motion that we vote for Carrie Chin. The paper I printed, I thought it said two. See, number of vacancies, two.
More than two.
It said two on that, but this one says one.
It says, yeah. The board agenda says one on the peer now.
Yeah. So then I'd go back to my original motion. I make a motion we support a vote for Carrie Chin from Roland Unified School District and Helen Hall from Walnut Valley Unified School District.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Discussion?
I have, if we go with this and we're successful, I would ask that Mr. Chin get input from the rest of the board as to what our concerns are. I read all the papers that were filed by all the candidates, and I think at least my concerns are much broader than the concern that you listed in your filing, and I think we need to expand that quite a bit. So I would appreciate if you would get input from us as to what the concerns are.
Yes, of course I will.
Any more discussion? Okay, those in favor of this motion for Carrie Chin and Helen Hall for the CSB candidates, or representatives, I'm sorry. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Congratulations. You got our vote. Now everybody has to vote, and we'll get the results. Okay, next is these are pupil items. RUSD student number 12-1320, readmission from expulsion. Student 12-1320 was expelled from the Roland Unified School District by the Board of Education on June 25th, 2013. It is recommended that student 12-1320 be readmitted to the district effective February 15th, 2017, in order to receive a diploma from the Roland Unified School District. All those in favor?
I make a motion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I make a motion.
Second?
I second.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? RUSD student number 141508 was expelled from the Roland Unified School District by the Board of Education on March 10th of 2015. The student has since completed all requirements of the rehabilitation plan and is eligible to be readmitted to the Roland Unified School District. It is recommended that student number 141508 be readmitted to the district effective February 15, 2017, with placement at Nogales High School. May I have a motion?
I make a motion.
Second?
Second.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Next is RUSD student number 151610, readmission from expulsion. Student 151610 was expelled from the Roland Unified School District by the Board of Education on April 19, 2016. The student has since completed all requirements of the rehabilitation plan and is eligible to be readmitted to the Roland Unified School District. It is recommended that student 151610 be readmitted to the district effective February 15th, 2017, with placement at Santana High School.
I make a motion.
Second? Do we have a second?
Second.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Next is student number 161705, stipulated expulsion. Approve the stipulated expulsion of student number 161705 from all schools and programs of the Roland Unified School District effective February 15, 2017, with referral to a county or alternative school outside the district for placement in an educational program. Parents have waived the due process of procedures as approved by the board. May I have a motion?
I make a motion.
Second?
Second.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Is that the one? Because this is in different order.
Yeah. We don't.
It's in different order.
Did I miss?
No.
It's different order than there was in the workbook.
You want to grab your book?
I have to grab the book to see which one it is.
Yeah, because we just have.
Because the order is different.
It's the same order. They're just it's the expulsions.
Same order. Is this reversed?
Reversed.
Okay, that's fine then. That's fine.
We're going to make sure. We don't want to mess up. It's too important. Teresa thought it's just because the readmissions are on top
are at the
now.
Bottom. Right.
Yeah, they
just
went
to the exposures are in the readmit. So this came, these are the three orders.
So we're
this
doing
is the one we're taking
first
action
one.
On right
okay.
now.
Okay. Okay.
Just going to bear.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
So this is 161705, is that correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can I have a motion?
I make a motion? I think I already did.
You did it?
Carrie second.
Okay, those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
I oppose.
I too, too. No.
The vote is 3-2 in favor. RUSD student number 161706, expulsion. Approve the expulsion of student 161706 from all schools and programs of Roland Unified School District effective February 15th, 2017 with referral to a county or alternative school outside this district for placement in an educational program. I need a motion.
I make a motion.
Second. Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Not on the students, do we? I'm sorry, do it again. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passed. Student number 161707, expulsion. Approve the expulsion of student 161707 from all schools and programs of Roland Unified School District effective February 15, 2017 with referral to a county or alternative school outside the district for placement in an educational program. Motion?
I make a motion.
Second?
Those
in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Next is the consent calendar. One item has asked to be pulled. It's HR item. Let me get the number. Sorry.
9D1.
We normally.
11D1.
11D1. We normally vote for all the items in the consent calendar together unless somebody is asked to pull an item, in which case. We will vote for everything except for that one that Ms. Friedman asked to have pulled, and we'll discuss that when we get to it. All those in favor of the other items in the consent calendar, say aye. Oh.
I make a motion.
I'll second.
No discussion, right? Consent? Okay, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Sorry, folks.
You're fine.
Okay, now we'll go to item 11D1. This is approved the Human Resources Action Report, HR 161707. Mm-hmm. I need a motion to approve.
I make a motion.
A second. Mr. Chen seconds. That's okay. Discussion? I think Ms. Friedman asked to pull this.
Do I discuss it now? Say I'm going to abstain. I have to recuse myself abstaining because of a conflict of interest.
Any other discussion? Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstain?
Abstain.
Okay.
Didn't know what to
Wow, we're down to board comments. We're getting there. Today we start with Ms. Friedman.
Okay, I attended the CSEA meeting, which was really interesting. International Day at Ibarra was fun. Giano had an honor roll awards assembly, and I attended the AVID Learning Night at Hollingsworth. The textbook viewing was outstanding. The showcase was incredible. I've gone to many school visits, so I'm not going to mention which schools, but I saw so many wonderful things happening at Roland. Technology in all the classrooms, writing, small groups, partners working together, questioning for understanding, so much more. Excellent teaching, lessons, and learning going on. Teachers and aides working hard, administrators, and I really want to thank the principals who are very busy walking us around to the classrooms. The LCAP presentation was outstanding today, and I'm going to say Happy Black History Month. Happy President's Day, Valentine's Day, and I look forward to reading across America to read in classrooms, and have a good evening.
Thank you, Mrs. Friedman.
Short.
Mr. Chen.
First, I want to say thank you to the LCAP team. Very
informative information. And very good work. And secondly, there's two community contacts that I know in the community bring some good news to our district. And the first one is a North American Taiwanese Women Association, and they offer a scholarship to our 12th graders. But the application deadline is very short. That means the very few competitions. So I share the information to the district and encourage our 12th graders to apply. That's $1,000 scholarship for the 12th graders. And the other one is the West Covina City Council, City Councilman Tony Wu, and we talked about that for a few months ago, and finally he tried to make it happen. Is in West Covina, they have a project called Buy Local and raise some money, so it's raise some fund to support the school district after school program, including ours. So we are talking with him to finalize some detail, and I hope it will happen and it will benefit our kids in the next school year. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chen. Ms. Friedman? I'm sorry, you don't get another turn, Donna. Mrs. Pride?
I'll provide a full copy of my board comments to our administrative assistant for the minutes. Just highlight a couple of things. This past Saturday, Donna Friedman and I participated in a study session for the La Puente Valley ROP board, and it was very insightful, and there's a very positive vision coming out of ROP, and we look forward to being a part of it. I also wanted to mention that I attended the tour day at Hurley Elementary this year, and I just really want to take my hat off to Yesenia Alvarez and her staff. They really have to be commended for their dedication to the students there and the progress that they're making at that site. It was really incredible, the things that I saw and heard about. Finally, on Saturday, February 25th, I will be working the San Gabriel Valley NAACP Youth Summit at the West Covina Senior Center. I thank those who have shared the flyer with the youth in our district, and hopefully they will participate. The keynote speaker will be Dr. Coley, who's president of Cal Poly Pomona, and Roland's very own Dr. Jeremy Hart, and he is a doctor now. He was a counselor at Nogales and Giano. A lot of you guys remember him. And he's going to be the keynote speaker as well. I know also that Shay Lohman is supporting this event and will be there working alongside of me, and I'm happy to have him there to participate. So Roland will be well represented at this event, and we really hope that our students will come out and take advantage of this awesome opportunity of learning and engagement on that day. So again, happy Black History Month, and enjoy your days off for President's Day.
Thank you, Mrs. Pride. Mr. Malkin?
So I get a half an hour now, since we're ahead of time. First, I want to thank, and I know Mr. Is it Naus? Kraus?
Naus.
Naus?
Naus.
Naus. Okay, and O-U-S-E. I want to thank him and his family for such a legacy that he's leaving to his parents. I think it's just fabulous. It's something that we all hope that our children will do. So I think that's just a wonderful thing. Secondly, happy Valentine's Day to everybody. The fact that you're still here shows your true love to education, which isn't very many. So I do appreciate the ones that are here. I want to thank all the staff that took time out of the busy schedules to escort us around when we did the school visits. I'm always impressed by the talented staff that our district has, but more importantly, the students and their learning and how talented they are. Mr. Flores, the schools are looking good. Your touch of excellence is getting out there, and I can't wait until all the schools experience your touch of excellence. I want to thank Gina Ward for all the staff that worked behind her on the RUSD showcase. another big success again this year. This Friday, our Kiwanis Club is going to be providing 127 kids or students from McKinney-Vento with shoes and socks and books and other things. And this is the flyer if anybody wants one. It will be from 2:30 to 4:30 at the Family Resource Center. And then just a comment. We're living in uncertain times, and as we look forward to the future of our country, I feel it is more important than ever that we are sensitive to our students' needs. External events, as well as school events, have an impact on student behavior. We have a diverse population, and for some students, the events happening in our country can be more stressful than to others. Please be patient and show understanding and listen to the students when they speak. It is fortuitous that we reinstated our music program this year. Music is a universe, is universal and brings pleasure and peace of mind. When the going gets tough, listen to the music in our schools and walk around the campus. It will soothe the difficult times ahead. And finally, in honor of Black History Month, I'd like to close with a quote from Martin Luther King, Jr. We must remember that intelligence is not enough. Intelligence plus character, that is the goal of true education.
Thank you. Very nice. Before you go, Mr. Chen, you had something really exciting last month that you didn't share.
So exciting, he forgot.
Oh. Yeah, last month and I visited Washington, D.C. I attended the presidential, the 58th presidential inauguration. And I was invited by Mr. Edwards' office. And I attend the inauguration and the official ball. And I attend several events before the pre-inauguration. One of them is the Mr. Edwards' reception in his residence. And the other one is in the Foreign Affairs Committee, the reception, and another one is the French ambassador to the U.S. had the reception honoring Mr. Royce. So they are very amazing experience to me. This first time I attend those events. The people are very friendly, and I also experienced the huge protest, the Million Women March in Washington, D.C. But a lot of people are very crowded, but it's very everything's in order, and there's no violence at all. And I see this true democracy showing people had the voice and people follow the whatever the law and the subway are packed, but there no violence, no accident, nothing. And all the buses bringing all the people are parked outside of the D.C. and all of the protesters ride subway. So then that's very, very impressed the system. It's working very well. So I was very excited and very valuable experience to me. And especially I'm a immigrant from the other country. I'm not born here. I came from a country, Taiwan. When I was there, there was no presidential election. There's no partial democracy. It's not 100% democracy. And I see this happens. So I learned a lot from the inauguration, from the event.
Yeah. Thank you. That was quite a thing. Yeah. Okay, last but not least, I want to say to the board that I am very proud of this board, that they attend every meeting. They're really getting out into the community and taking a pulse on what's going on and talking to people. That's important for our job. I want to give a special shout out to Gina Ward, who is everywhere taking pictures and doing so many wonderful things for our district. Thank you, Gina. You do a really great job. I've been trying to send, as I get them, things to Dr. Mitchell and Gina about opportunities for students, contests, you know, classes they can take in the summer elsewhere. And there's some nice ones coming up. Remember, now Don reminded me this last night because I gave a report at the local coordinating council meeting that March 8th is our day of the principal, so everybody can sign up to shadow a principal at one of our schools. It's a great event, and it's followed by a lunch. And last but not least, I want to tell all these sick ones that I hear coughing to take a rest, take your antibiotics, and get over it because I don't want to catch it. If there's no more business, I'm going to adjourn the meeting. May I have a motion?
I'll move.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, meeting adjourned at 8:47.
Good job.
I don't know how good, but we got through it.